The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for The Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking about the obvious. What's going to happen in January when Corbett takes over? Are we going to be talking about the state stores again, the wine and spirit shops being sold? It seems a majority of Pennsylvanians think it's a great idea. I'm going to tell you why not. We're going to talk about foreclosures, evidently out in California, and I want to get into this in a bit. There's been an action. Couple of people have been arrested. I think we should be doing more of that. Maybe we'll talk about Coxey's Army a little bit. Maybe that's, and it's what I've been calling for from the beginning. Eventually the unemployed have to rise up. Eventually the unemployed have to organize and become a force that helps the rest of us. That's the only way the profiteers, the corporatists, are ever going to change their ways. And it's going to benefit all of us. Even if you're lucky enough right now to have a job, it's going to benefit you as well by making sure that they have a job. I know we'd like to think that, you know, we're on an island and we're on our own path and we're our own guy or girl or whatever. But, folks, we're in this stuff together. We're also going to be taking your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We've got a whole bunch to talk about over the next 3 hours, so we hope you'll stick around. Our quote of the hour comes from Peggy Mears. She is a Fontana homeowner and a campaign leader for one of the groups that the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, ACCE. She said a group of rich, greedy bankers crashed the economy and got bailed out by the taxpayers. Now the banks are making unprecedented profits. At a time of year when banks are distributing outrageous bonuses to their top executives, they are kicking more and more families out of their homes, and it has to stop. And I agree, it has to stop. And if you look what we talked about yesterday when Bloomberg News reported that Goldman Sachs' top executives, $111 million in bonuses in 2007 and 2009. So what's happening is they didn't get their bonuses in 2009, so they're making up for it. Blankenfeld, the head guy there, $24.3 million. Cohn, the number two guy, $24 million. You go down the list. Their CFO getting $21.3 million. Their co-president getting $20.8 million. And he left the firm in March of 2009, and we're still giving him $20.8 million. The co-head of the investment management division, he's going to get $14.3 million. And you wonder why people are ticked off. And, you know, you look at this group, the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. What they're doing is they're organizing victims of this foreclosure thing. And the Los Angeles Times had a story today on this. Police arrested 22 demonstrators who blocked an entrance to a downtown Chase Bank branch today to protest what they said were unfair foreclosure practices. The demonstrators, which included homeowners facing foreclosure, community advocates, and labor leaders, silently allowed officers to bind their wrists behind their backs with plastic restraints and guide them into a police van. Dozens more, 120 in all, protesters were there watching and chanting. And, you know, as they walked away, these 12 men and 10 women, today was their Stop Bank Greed, Save Our Neighborhoods Day of Action. And, you know, even the detective, the person who arrested them, said, look, man, just doing my job. What bothers me with all of this is we have given billions, hundreds of billions, to these banksters. And they haven't done anything to help folks who are in trouble because the economy collapsed. It was nothing that they did. It wasn't the people's fault. You know, they were living the American dream. They were working hard. They were paying their bills. They were looking towards the future. They were part of George Bush's ownership society. And they pulled the rug underneath them, right out from underneath them. And what I find interesting is the article goes on to say that, you know, they called Chase for a response and no response. No one immediately returned their call. So what happened is this group went to the Chase, J.P. Morgan Chase Bank there in Los Angeles. They set up, they had a moving van roll up, and they were gonna move right in. And this poor woman, 85 years old, a great grandmother, 85 year old woman, homeless. So they're gonna move her into the J.P. Morgan Chase building. Well, security, you know, locked everything down, put the grates up around the building, and so they set up in the parking lot. You know, they had a mattress out there, a couple of chairs, a rug, and table right there in the in front of the bank. And then police came and took them away. Again, what I'm saying is we need to go back and have some rational discussion. What do we do with folks who are in trouble? I said right from the very beginning, and this was right when everything collapsed, make the homeowner whole. You make the bottom of the scale whole, and that will solve your problems at the top. You can't possibly bail the bank out without bailing out the people on the bottom. But that's what we did. We said, here, banking industry, here's $700 billion, and Bush signed off on it and, you know, fought for no strings attached and handed it over. Even though if you ask a Fox News listener, they will tell you that, of course, it was all Obama's doing, even though Obama wasn't president for months later. But here's the thing. I said right from the beginning what we should have done is we should have said, okay, the bubble has burst. All these folks have mortgages. We need jobs. And for me, this was a really good plan. You go through, you refinance everybody's mortgage. You take into account that property values have fallen, and you renegotiate so that nobody is upside down on their mortgage. And yeah, the banks are going to take a haircut. A lot of people are going to take haircuts in this. But what you save is you save this collapse. You put people back to work. You have people continuing to pay their mortgage. And you stop the collapse. But that's not what we did. And what I said is you make the government, as we've done in the past, the banker of last resort. Much like we did with the Home Ownership Loan Corporation under Roosevelt. We said, okay, we're going to buy up these mortgages at face value, at the value of current value. You'll pay them off over the next 30 years. Everything will be fine. And that's what they did back then. And they actually turned a small profit. And it was shut down in the 50s. And it was done. I said we could have recreated that. But what we had in Washington at the time were a bunch of people who hated government. They didn't mind taking government dollars. They didn't mind taking taxpayer dollars, but they didn't want government involvement. They didn't want government oversight. So we see a lot of waste. And look, it's that self-fulfilling prophecy. You've got people who hate government, doing it poorly, screaming to their minions that government can't do anything right. And it's just kind of this big snowball, which out of it came the Tea Party. You know, they look to Bush's government. They go, look, he can't do anything right. He's an idiot. And I agreed. But that's not how government should be run. You know, George Bush is not indicative of how a smart, efficient government is run. So what we got now is, well, we need smaller government. We need more accountable government. And when you hear someone say, I want small government, what you're really hearing them say is, I want ineffective government. I want weak government. I want the Articles of Confederation back. I want the federal government so small and so weak, you know, that a little township, a little city up in Massachusetts could put a, I mean, you know, much like Shay's Rebellion, could scuttle the whole thing, which is what happened. But that's what the small government, states' rights people want. And I look at this to me is another one of those issues that the working class should be solidly behind. Because a lot of us have mortgages. A lot of us are upside down on mortgages. And who wins out in all of this? The Goldman Sachs, the J.P. Morgan Chases, the Wells Fargo. And we end up where we are now, where we're expediting getting them out of their homes. We're robo-signing. We're hiring hairdressers and Walmart clerks to, you know, sign on the dotted line. Oh, yeah, yep, everything's all right. Yep, it's fine. So that we can kick people out of their homes. And I got to be honest. When I heard that whole robo-signing thing, I said we should build a new prison. Every one of those people, and I, you know, again, ignorance is no excuse. And I, you know, I'm one of these people going to stand up for working people. But if you do something really stupid like that, I'm sorry, you had to know. You know, it's like another reason why you need to have a voice on the job. Oh, but my boss told me if I didn't do it, he'd fire me. Do we really want to have that conversation? I mean, my boss told me to rob the bank. If I didn't rob the bank, he'd fire me. I mean, it's that kind of ridiculous.
Buddy Michael has advocated several times on the show, Rick. You know, when he talks about foreclosures, you know, challenge them. He seems to think, and he might be right in particular situations. The procedure that's been used is really illegal.
Well, that's
but nobody challenges it. That's the problem.
Marcy Kaptur from the 9th District in Ohio, back in 2008, was saying, look, make them show you the deed, show you the note, and don't leave your house. Make them throw you out until they show you the proper paperwork.
And therein lies the problem. You hit it in the head. How many people even know their rights? And that's a shame. And they don't challenge. And maybe that's our problem. We've had it too good for too long. Maybe we need to be standing up. And if that means standing up and even going to jail temporarily for days, we do it.
Yeah.
Maybe we've reached that point.
Here's the thing. We're trying to get a hold of the folks with the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. As we talked to one of their spokespeople, they are on the way down to bail the folks out of jail as we speak. The 22 people who were arrested, they're trying to get them out of jail. And hopefully over the next couple hours, we will talk to some of those folks who were arrested and find out the... And really, I got to tell you, to me, this is exciting stuff. Because this is exactly the kind of stuff that we need to do to draw attention to these things. I'm a big believer in taking to the streets. I'm a big believer in causing a little wrinkle. Not being violent. Not being destructive, but being in the street. Putting a little wrench into the gears.
Well, I'm a little older than you, Rick, and I clearly remember two historic phases. You had the anti-war movement, we had the civil rights movement, and especially the civil rights movement. There were some violent in that the power structures reacted violently against them. But they kept to it, and over a period of several years, they finally agitated, and we got to the point that as we had, they got consensus, And as a country, what they did, they pricked the conscience of the country, especially the civil rights movement. And eventually they got it done. And it wasn't pretty, and it wasn't easy, and sometimes it was even violent. But it was effective.
I still say that's what we need to do. Out into the streets. Be seen. The question then becomes, is will the corporate-controlled for-profit media cover it? Will they do their job? Anyway, we're going to talk about that and a whole bunch more today. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. As Christmas approaches, job news around the country is in flux. In Bensalem, Pennsylvania, prescription drug company Express Scripts closed its doors on 365 workers Wednesday morning. The company announced plans to close the plant 8 months ago, citing new developments in technology, making the plant obsolete. Workers complained that the company never offered them the opportunity to transfer. Under a severance agreement reached with the Service Employees International Union, the laid-off workers will receive a lump payment of $10,000, 5 months of health care, and a week's pay for each year of service. Meanwhile, Colorado and Indiana have both received positive jobs news thanks to Abound Solar and a $400 million federal loan from the Department of Energy. The company plans to hire 1,000 workers at a production plant in Indiana and an additional 200 workers in Longmont, California. An additional 200 workers in Longmont, Colorado. $100 million of the federal loan will go toward expanded production at the Colorado facility, and the rest will mostly go toward opening a new manufacturing facility in Tipton, Indiana. A surprising factoid regarding the production of the solar panels is that the majority are going to be exported. Germany is currently the leading country when it comes to adopting solar power, and 90% of Abound's panels will go to that country. In New York City news, a panel of judges ruled on Tuesday that the Metropolitan Transit Authority is obliged to give subway and bus employees a 3% raise next year, as well as lower health care contributions. The MTA had made claims that a contract agreement reached in arbitration was unaffordable, and has been making legal challenges, which culminated with Tuesday's appellate division ruling. Healthcare contributions will be reduced to 1.5% of earnings and doesn't include overtime. This week has been big for privacy and new technologies. The Third Circuit Court of Appeals on Wednesday denied a request by the federal government to reconsider a decision regarding access to cell phone records that reveal locations. Under the previous ruling, the government will need to obtain a probable cause search warrant to receive cell phone records. That decision reflects a Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals decision on Tuesday, which requires the federal government to obtain a search warrant before seizing emails from service providers. According to the Electric Frontier Foundation, the court ruled that email users can assume the same privacy expectations with email as they would with phone calls and postal mail. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by Ulico and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Today, in 1977, eight female bank tellers in Wilmar, Minnesota, began the first strike against a bank in U.S. history. At issue, the fact that they were paid half of what a male teller was paid. gee, you know, things kind of stay the same. The strike ended in a moral victory, but it was an economic defeat 2 years later, like some of these things go. But here's the thing. You know, when I look at the situation that we're in as a country, I honestly and truthfully have been waiting and calling for the next Jacob Coxey. And really the millions of Americans who are being held hostage by the Republican Party. I'm waiting for folks to take to the streets like they did back in 1894 when they marched from Massillon, Ohio, and all over the country through Pennsylvania, through Maryland, to Washington, D.C. Like today, the workers were in a deep depression. They demanded that their government do something besides cater to the wealthy. Sound familiar? I mean, look at this scenario right now, the tax issue. We're talking about giving hundreds of billions away to the top 2%. And the working people are getting, well, I mean, the unemployed are getting a little bit. And the working people, we're going to get 2% of what we should be investing in Social Security. I'm trying to figure out what the rationale from Obama's point was that. Just trying to figure that out. I'm missing that boat. But that's what we're saying. We're saying here, you know, times are tough. You know, go out and here's a couple of bucks in your pocket. And don't worry about it down the road. That's what bothers me. And if you remember, you know, much like 2008, there was a great worker panic, the great panic of 1893, where workers just like the Bush era, just like when everything collapsed in 2008, workers were pitched out into the street like, you know, like trash. Sorry, got no work for you. Today we're calling for the same things they did back then. Create jobs. Build roads, build bridges, do some of the other public works projects that at that time, like today, were desperately needed. Sound familiar? I mean, you know, this whole idea that history repeats itself. And understand that, you know, Coxey and you know, the people went again in 1914. This was not a simple one-time deal. These were organized workers who said, look, you know, we want our government to do something. We're struggling out here. And, you know, I look back to that, and as I've read about the Great Panic of 1893 and Coxey, I got to be honest. They were completely desperate. I don't know that we're there yet. They didn't have unemployment benefits back then. They had a little help from the churches and stuff, but very little. Had some help from the community, but very little. What we've done by extending unemployment again and again and again is, well, we've kind of staved off some of the desperation. And I'm saying if we had that, if we had those folks who were where I think we're going, taken to the streets, I think we would be demanding more from our government. And that's where I thought the Tea Party was starting. Honestly, when the Tea Party started, I really thought this is the movement that I've been looking for. These are the folks that are going to make significant change in a positive direction. And, oh, was I wrong. You know, because I was there with them. I'm angry. I'm ticked off. Our government is spending way too much money on the absolute wrong stuff. And then we turn around and we blame the government and take the side of corporations, take the side of the wealthy. It's kind of backwards, in my opinion. But going back to Coxey for a minute, some say that he and his band of unemployed were the inspiration for the book, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. If you remember the book, Dorothy was supposedly, you know, the American people, and the Scarecrow was the American farmer. The Tin Man was the industrial worker. The Cowardly Lion was the political leader of the time. And they were marching down the yellow brick road to, well, to Washington, D.C. And they wanted relief. They wanted help from the wizard, who obviously, you know, was the interpretation was the wizard was the president. If you remember, you know, from the book, it was Dorothy's shoes were made of silver. And, of course, the yellow brick road was gold, going back to the gold standard. And a whole bunch of this goes into that. But the reality, and just like the book, I mean, I'm as I read through some of the history of this, it's amazing that we're reliving these times again. And we don't learn from the history. We don't learn from it, Jake. Just don't seem to get it.
Well, you know, I said this before, and I do believe it. One of the problems is we're kind of too removed from real desperation in this country. That one or two generational difference from the Great Depression until now, there's not a lot of people who remember millions and millions of people being destitute and desperate and literally packing up and moving all the way across the country just to find a job and just to be able to exist. We've lost that connection. And if you talk to anybody that went through the Great Depression, they are very conservative, and they valued everything they valued everything they had, and they made ultimate use of it because they went through a time in life where they literally had to account for every penny to exist.
Well, yeah, they were conservative in what they did, but on a social policy scale, they were much more progressive and much more interested in government doing the things that it should be doing. Oh, I don't know,
well,
like helping to create jobs.
And that's how the Democratic Party was really, really gained its strength out of the Great Depression.
But I remember as a kid, you know, I remember my mother worked in a nursing home. And I was, you know, I guess I was given the great gift of being able to meet a whole bunch of different people who lived through this period. And the stories that they told, I still remember, and I was, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old. I remember listening to their stories and remembering the pain and the suffering that they talked about, and, you know, the hope that it never happened again. And, you know, when they were talking, it was always in a positive way of how things done by our government helped. And, you know, I still remember that. And I think it's important that we, you know, we went to Washington, D.C., went to the FDR Memorial. And you see, you know, the main display is people standing in line, waiting for the bread line or the unemployment line or the soup line or whatever it was. That's what they were waiting for. And what I've been saying for the longest time, when we created online applications for unemployment, when you no longer had to go to the unemployment office to sign up, you kind of put those folks off into the shadows. They were out of sight, out of mind. And I think that was a disservice here in this state anyway, because that was a great place to organize folks. That was a good place to go and say, hey, you know what, this would have been a great way to organize the unemployed and to maybe start something like Coxie. Maybe start getting people to look, you had that idiot from York who marched from York, PA to Washington, D.C. because he was against PLAs. 99.9% of the people in the state don't have a clue what a PLA is, but they know that this jerk-off, he was going to, you know, I'm going to walk down the road. I don't know why, just as he was against it. But, you know, unemployed workers, if I were unemployed, if I were one of the 99ers, you would see me with my cardboard box right in front of the White House until they arrested me. And I would try and get a whole bunch of other people with cardboard boxes to sleep alongside of me. And speaking of cardboard boxes, starting Saturday at noon, we will be in our cardboard boxes in the giant parking lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street in Carlisle. We'll be there from the 18th through the 24th doing our Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays event. If you can stop out, bring out a can of corn, maybe a case, whole cart full would be great. Go to hungryandhomeless.org if you want to make a cash donation. They are all tax deductible. And remember, you can also watch the whole event from the comfort of your home right at thericksmithshow.com. We will be streaming the entire event right there. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Wow, another astonishing scientific breakthrough has been made. The benefit is something that can be identified just about by everybody, exulted Neil Carter, who helped produce this long-awaited advance for humankind. Is it a cancer cure? No, bigger than that. Is it a free, clean, perpetual source of energy? No, bigger even than that. What we have here is, are you ready? Apple slices that don't turn brown. Is this fabulous or what? Non-browning apple slices. Another marvel from the biotechnology profiteers who love to mess with the genetic makeup of the world's food supply. And this is truly a global accomplishment. The science of non-browning was pioneered in potatoes by Australian gene splicers who licensed it to Carter, a Canadian peddler of apple trees who hopes that American apple growers will now rip out their old-fashioned natural orchards and plant these biotech wonders of modern science. But it's going to be a hard sell. Genetically modified, said the head of Washington State's Apple Commission. That's a bad word in our industry. He's referring to the fact that consumers routinely reject foods they know to be altered. In fact, consumers are demanding more organic production, not stuff from a gene factory. Also, Carter could not have chosen a worse product to turn into a lab rat. Apples are the very symbol of nutrition and health, a perfect snack for children. Why mess with it? Besides, mothers know that a little lemon water is all it takes to keep apple slices from browning. This is Jim Hightower saying, this technology has no benefit for consumers, but it could fatten the bottom line of big box retailers, allowing them to sell old, inferior apples that look fresh only because they're still white. To learn more, call the Center for Food Safety, 202-547-9359.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoned, get started, get started, get started.
You know what I'm saying? Let's get it started. Let the revolution start today. I'm calling out to all working people. Take a stand. It's about time. You know, the third quarter of this year was the most profitable quarter for corporate America in the history of this country. Yet we're talking close to a 10% unemployment rate, foreclosures through the roof, and the people who do still have jobs, they're getting cut off at the knees. Every time you turn around, some company's trying to squeeze benefits or squeeze pay or squeeze more time out of their employees. At some point, you have to have enough. And that's why when I talked about it earlier in the program about this action by the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, I said this could be it. This could be the beginning of it. And what a better place to start. I've got Debbie Beard on the line. She is... from Los Angeles. She's one of the folks who was arrested today for this action. Debbie, thank you for taking time for us.
You're welcome.
Tell me, what happened today?
Well, we had our action at one of the Chase branches. Of course, they heard we were coming, and when we got there, they locked the bank down and wouldn't let us anyone in. So we had to have our action in front of the bank.
And what did you do?
We had some guest speakers who spoke about the problems that this has gone through. Some other families who were going through foreclosures. One family who actually was supposed to move out of their home, and because of an earlier action, Chase decided to let them stay in their home. There's some more families who are facing eviction. We spoke. We had a lot of support from SEIU and a lot of community members and things like that. We had a moving van pull up and move some small pieces of furniture out in the protest, you know, and it was the signifying that if Chase was putting us out of our house, then we were going to move into their house.
Well, you're going to have to go
stay somewhere.
You're going to have to go somewhere. And what I've been saying for the longest time, The folks who have been foreclosed on, the folks who, the 99ers who are out of unemployment benefits, they should be going to state capitals and to Washington, D.C. And popping tents on the governor's mansions and on the White House lawn to raise attention to this stuff.
Something has to be done. There are too many people, I mean thousands and thousands of people, who are going through this and who really shouldn't be going through it. Somebody has to take a stand and do something about it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. So let me ask you, what kind of reaction did you get from the police when I guess, 22 of you were arrested, right?
Yes. Well, actually, the police, their presence was very high, but they treated us pretty fairly. We were arrested and put. Kind of unpleasant being handcuffed and everything, but they didn't mistreat us in any kind of a way, though. Thank God for that. A lot of the officers that we spoke with were even sympathetic with us. Some of them themselves have gone through or are going through foreclosure.
Yeah, I tell a conservative friend of mine all the time, the number one way to turn a conservative into a liberal is to have his freedom taken away. So I got to ask you, you know, as you're looking at this this event, kind of fear the power of the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're hoping, since it was not just a little small protest here in Los Angeles and that it did spread nationwide, we're really hoping that someone in these big money banks have taken time to listen and open their ears and eyes and see that this is really not a game that they're playing. This is live. These are lives that are involved. This is affecting too many people.
Do you think they really care? Because I don't.
No, they don't care. If they cared, we wouldn't be in this situation.
Right, because I say the only way this is going to change is if you put enough pressure on the cowardly lions, the politicians, to actually step forward and do something for their constituents.
And this is a small step towards that. That's what we're hoping to do. We might not have gotten enough attention this time. It might take 3 or 4 or 5, 6 other times. But we're hoping that as time passes, that we will gather enough concern and support that the politicians will have to take notice. They'll have to decide that it's time for them to do something.
Let's talk about your personal situation. I understand you're currently under foreclosure. Tell me a little bit about how you got into that.
Well, I was off work for a few months due to illness. And my husband just couldn't carry everything on his own. When we saw that we were getting into trouble, we called our lenders ourselves and asked them for help. They didn't give it to us. At one point, we were even told to write a check, even though they were told that the money wasn't in the account. We were told to write a check to make it look like we were trying to make the payment.
Yeah, so they could hit you with overdraft fees and all that.
Right. Right. So we requested a modification. While we were waiting for an answer on the modification, we got a knock at the door with someone telling us that our house had been sold. We had to move. Of course, that set us up, and we were like, you know, it's not going down like this. We decided that we were going to join a neighborhood action committee, and we went to them. They gave us the steps to follow. They gave us the encouragement. We found out that there were so many other people like that until we decided, okay, we've got to fight. We can't just let it go like this. We have 3 children. Our youngest is 21, has never known another home, you know. So we had to fight. We're still going through the process. We were, the first modification that they offered us was actually almost twice as much as what we were paying at first.
How is that a modification? Yeah. That's a modification for the worst.
It was not a modification. You know, when you go for the through the modification process, they tell you that you pay a trial payment for 3 months, and after that you'll go into a permanent modification. It doesn't work like that. The banks haven't worked it like that because they don't want to.
Well, no, it's
so we went a year on a 3-month trial period, and then they stopped taking our payments.
That is absolutely amazing, and it's not that you're not paying. It's that you got sick and you fell a little bit behind. I think millions of people that kind of stuff happens to every year.
Right. There's so many people that it's happening to.
So what would help you? If policymakers were listening, and what do you think would help you avoid this? Because, you know, obviously you want to stay in your home. Obviously you want to pay for it. What would help?
Well, at this point, we're completely upside down. Principal reduction would really help us, but they're not doing that. We need the politicians to be more concerned about the constituents in their areas. They need to be more concerned about what's really going on. They are really siding with the banks and industrials instead of with the people.
So when they came to foreclose on you, did they have the paperwork that they – because we've been hearing a lot of this with robo-signers and all of these fake documents that they're – and the not having the notes. Explain how this process has worked so our listeners can hear this.
Well, actually, they send documents through the mail. They ask you to fill out a paperwork into them so that they can work your modification. They say that they're willing to work with you. You're asked countless of times to resubmit documentation. They claim that they're working with you all this time, which they actually aren't. And it gets pretty frustrating.
So it sounds to me like they're sending you these documents more to set you up, to put you in a negative situation, just so they can foreclose on you.
Actually, it does, because you're constantly getting further and further behind, and they're really quick to throw that up in your face. You know, you're throwing so much behind. What are you going to do? Are you trying to keep your house now? Of course we're trying to keep it. Why do you think that we've gone through all the steps of sending in paperwork and trying to do everything that you say? Why don't you decide to start doing what you say you're supposed to do?
Yeah, I said right from the beginning, when this whole economic collapse happened under Bush in 08, that we should have made the homeowners whole. We should have gone and refinanced the homes so that you didn't have people, as many people as you have, who are upside down in their mortgage. Let me ask you this. Where do you go from here? You're out of jail. You've been charged with trespassing, I believe?
Yes.
Where do you go from here?
Well, we do have a return court date on the 7th of January. We'll just have to come back to court again and see what happens. As far as our fighting our foreclosure, we're still going to fight. We're still going to do everything that they're asking us to do, but we're going to demand that they start doing the things that they're supposed to do.
And let me, if they don't do anything tomorrow, what does the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment do? What's your next step here?
Well, that's something that we have to plan. We have to go back now and plan. What is our next step? What are we going to do? But we are going to continue fighting.
With the exception of 22 people being arrested, do you think this was a success?
I would say yes.
I would say yes, too, because you got national coverage out of it. And you've raised...
The publicity is really what is going to carry this, because the more media coverage we get, the more the people will see, the more politicians will see, the more that the people who are in these big banks and things are going to see. They can't continue hiding their heads in the sand.
Yep, and I think you're going to be that first shot that I hope of people who are about to lose their homes across this country hear and begin to organize and do the things that have to be done to make sure that folks like you get to stay in your home.
Well, I would ask them to look for help. Go to your neighborhood community organizations. Look for help. You're going to find out that there's so many people who are in the same boat that you're in. There's no need to be embarrassed. There's no need to feel that you have no voice. You do have a voice. You have to make it heard.
That's the message that people need to take from this, that you're not alone in this, and that there are people out there that you can come together with and begin fighting, as you guys have done there in Los Angeles.
Definitely.
Debbie Beard, I appreciate your action, your time, and I wish you nothing but the best in this fight.
Thank you.
Again, you know, this is one of those things, and I got to be honest, it's one of those things that right from the beginning, we should have taken a completely different path. But now that we're in this mess, it's going to take folks like Debbie Beard and people like them, like her, to come together and get out. Start moving into Chase. Start moving into Bank of America. Start moving into Wells Fargo. That's what's going to have to happen. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think about this? And are you facing foreclosure? Would love to hear that. We're right back after this.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Well, I got to tell you, I think it's one of these things that can't wait. And especially now that, you know, look, the Tea Party people came in. They're supposed to be the, you know, the spokesman of the people. They're supposed to be right there, right there. The heartbeat of America. To me, this is a heartbeat issue. To me, this is a fundamental issue of the American dream. And, you know, I got to be honest. I remember about a year ago, I had thought about doing some kind of refi on my mortgage before I paid it off. I thought about doing some kind of refi, and I called my bank, which just happened to be Chase, and said, hey, can we work something out? I'm not behind anything. My FICO score is 800. It fluctuates between 800 and 820. So I've got good credit. Hey, can we work something out? So I don't have to go through all the paperwork, the mortgage insurance and the title insurance and all the stuff, the thousands of dollars that it would take to refi. Can't we just, you know, redo the terms? I wanted to shorten the number of years. They would have none of it. None of it. And the problem is these banks are so big that they don't want any, they don't care about customer service. They don't care about the little guy, which if you remember, if you've been listening to this show for any time, right when this happened, I said, this is the opportunity to use antitrust laws. We go in, we bank, we break up these big banks and we make small community lenders again to where I can walk in and I can shake Joe's hand. Hey, Joe, the bank president, I'm having a little problem. Can you help me out? Much like my grandparents were able to do.
I remember I was young, and my parents, I mean, back then, growing up when I was a young lad, a man's bond was his handshake. And back then, that's how my parents dealt with the local bank, believe it or not. That's the way it was. And the great thing about a local bank, you know, people talk, they could, you know, if you didn't treat them well, the community knew it. And the opposite was true. You treated them good, you could get that bank a lot of customers, and that we're missing that. And we touched on that, and there's one question. And I haven't heard any I shouldn't say any. Every now and then you hear a Democrat bring up the antitrust laws. why aren't they enforced, and or more to the point, why aren't they strengthened if, in fact, they are too weak?
You know, at the end of this, we've got to look at this big bank scenario that we're in, and it's just getting bigger and bigger. I mean, we did nothing to solve the problem. I think we only made things worse by allowing them to get bigger. I mean, what was the first thing they did? They bought up PNC, the one in Cleveland, National City Bank. Just amazing stuff. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Karen on line one. How are we doing tonight, Karen?
Hello, Rick, and I am calling you in response to the phone call or the interview that you had.
That's an amazing story, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and I live in California, and I'm calling you because I'm hoping that by me sharing my story, it'll help others. But basically, I went through the same thing that your guest went through. My mortgage was with Litton Loan Servicing. But I have to tell you, just to back up, we had a regular 30-year mortgage. Here in California, they were telling us that our property values would never decline. We were cash short. I'm going to admit that. But we needed repairs done on our home.
Right. I think everyone was told that property values would never decline. And that's the reason that the housing market, it heated up so fast and it grew to such a big bubble. I think that just that thought that it would never collapse was in a lot of people's mind.
Yes, and especially where I live, it's a beautiful spot in California, right along the ocean. We thought that we had made a good investment in our home, but the reason that we bought our home was for our two sons, you know, to open a stable household where we owned our property and lived the American dream.
Yeah, the reason that all of us do that, the reason that all parents do that, the reason that, it's the American dream.
Yes. So we did that, and we lived for many years happily with that scenario. However, as our house grew older, we found that we needed a new roof, that our kitchen was deteriorating, and so we had a regular 30-year mortgage. But we got a phone call saying, by the way, we were countrywide.
Yeah.
So we did go ahead and refinance our home. And we took the money and we put the roof on our house and improved our kitchen. Well, things just went downhill from then. We both had some minor health problems, and my husband's income went down by $50,000 a year, which was a huge blow. I'm self-employed. With the economy in California, you know that anybody who's in business for themselves, you know, you're going to suffer. Nobody has any money.
Yep.
So anyway, we tried to do a loan modification. And as your guest said, it was a horrible process. The same thing that she said happened to her happened to us. We went through these trial periods, 3-month trial periods, where we would make the payments in hopes that they would modify our mortgage. We went through 2 years of this hell, frankly, hell. So at this point, we realized that we finally got a deal from Litton Loan Servicing, and what they offered us was $100 less than what we had already been paying.
Oh, that's a big help.
Oh, big help. So we said, you know what, we just gotta go. And so we did. I'm embarrassed to say this, but I'm hoping I'll help other people. We left the house. We moved to a city next door, and we're renting now. However, we still take care of the home. We go over there, we mow everything, we cut things back, we make it look nice, just waiting, hoping that we can work something out. Well, interestingly, we got something from Litton telling us that if you were denied a loan modification, or try again. So we're going to try it again. But in the meantime, I've had a final foreclosure notice posted on my front door. But, you know, my position is they have no proof of paperwork on my mortgage. My mortgage was sold so many times. And so I'm going to challenge it. I'm going to be like this California lion.
I hope you do. You know,
I will.
For the longest,
I will.
You know, 2 years ago, Marcy Kaptur, a congresswoman from Ohio, said she produced the note. You know, that's, you want me out of my house? Produce the note. And I think every person who's going through what you're going through should demand at least that they have their paperwork in order.
And here's the thing I want to share with other people also. In the very beginning, we hired an attorney to help us with the loan modification process.
And they probably cheated you.
They paid us, we paid them $2,000. They were pretty good. They kept in contact with us, and I think that they probably held off the foreclosure process for us. But here's the thing. We had the money. We could have kept making our mortgage payments, but we went through 2 years of 3 month trial period. And then they, as your guest said, then after that 3 month trial period, they suddenly say, oh, well, we didn't have all of the information that we needed from you, so we're not going to accept your payments any longer. But what I did ask the attorney to do was to ask Litton to produce the proof that they held the paper on my mortgage. And they never did that. So I would tell people to be very wary of these companies who are saying that they're going to help you modify your loan. It's a total waste of money.
Yeah, I agree. And my advice would have been to stay in the house until the last day and at least save yourself a little rent money there.
You know, Rick, I did, but for me, I couldn't do that because I can't live like that. We have income.
Right.
And I couldn't stand the threat anymore. I couldn't stand it. So
I can't imagine.
I had to move on. I had to move on with life.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be heavy. That would be heavy on your mind.
Yes, so that's why we decided to leave.
Here's where I want to leave this, Karen. The reality is don't think of yourself as any less of a person. You're doing the best you can. But at the end of this, this whole collapse of this economy was not your fault.
No, and I don't believe so. And thank you for those kind words. And I am with you. People need to take to the streets on this issue. And also, the anti-war movement needs to get active again. And I do not agree with the what Obama did this past week with the extension of the tax cuts for the rich.
I wanted
people to get their unemployment benefits, but I did not think that it should have been tied to the tax cuts for the rich. That's a huge blow for our country, and many people will not agree with me. But that's how I feel.
Well, I agree with you, Karen, and I appreciate the call. Call back anytime. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, again, you know, you hear those stories, and there's so many of them out there. You know, I've known people throughout the last year or so who've gotten into some trouble. And, you know, if we could have made that modification process simpler, like I said right from the beginning, we should have done, set up a private public corporation, buy up those mortgages. The banks would have to take a haircut. They'd have to take some pain in this, and allow people like Karen, allow people like Miss Beard to stay in their home, pay a reasonable payment, and save your communities. Simple stuff. Simple stuff. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. As Christmas approaches, job news around the country is in flux. In Bensalem, Pennsylvania, prescription drug company Express Scripts closed its doors on 365 workers Wednesday morning. The company announced plans to close the plant 8 months ago, citing new developments in technology, making the plant obsolete. Workers complained that the company never offered them the opportunity to transfer. Under a severance agreement reached with the Service Employees International Union, the laid-off workers will receive a lump payment of $10,000, 5 months of health care, and a week's pay for each year of service. Meanwhile, Colorado and Indiana have both received positive jobs news thanks to Abound Solar and a $400 million federal loan from the Department of Energy. The company plans to hire 1,000 workers at a production plant in Indiana and an additional 200 workers in Longmont, California. $100 million of the federal loan will go toward expanded production at the Colorado facility, and the rest will mostly go toward opening a new manufacturing facility in Tipton, Indiana. A surprising factoid regarding the production of the solar panels is that the majority are going to be exported. Germany is currently the leading country when it comes to adopting solar power, and 90% of Abound's panels will go to that country. In New York City news, a panel of judges ruled on Tuesday that the Metropolitan Transit Authority is obliged to give subway and bus employees a 3% raise next year, as well as lower health care contributions. The MTA had made claims that a contract agreement reached in arbitration was unaffordable and has been making legal challenges, which culminated with Tuesday's appellate division ruling. Healthcare contributions will be reduced to 1.5% of earnings and doesn't include overtime. This week has been big privacy in new technologies. The Third Circuit Court of Appeals on Wednesday denied a request by the federal government to reconsider a decision regarding access to cell phone records that reveal locations. Under the previous ruling, the government will need to obtain a probable cause search warrant to receive cell phone records. That decision reflects a Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals decision on Tuesday, which requires the federal government to obtain a search warrant before seizing emails from service providers. According to Electric Frontier Foundation, the court ruled that email users can assume the same privacy expectations with email as they would with phone calls and postal mail. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by Ulico and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
You know, I look at what we were talking about in the last segment. You know, you see these folks losing their homes. You see actions like happened today in California where 22 people were arrested for protesting, people being thrown out of their homes. And you go, how do you get that message out? Does the mainstream corporate-controlled for-profit media cover it? Most of the time, I would argue no. There are some who are saying, you know, we have no more news. It's infotainment. We have no more local content. It's all become canned. It's all syndicated. Very little here on the local level. And what has to happen, in my view, is we need to break up the big conglomerates and go back to local ownership. Which is why I look at a project like the Prometheus Radio Project as a great alternative to the corporate-controlled for-profit media structure. And I've got Maggie Abner on the phone here. She's with the Prometheus Radio Project. PrometheusRadio.org is their website. Maggie, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You know, I'm looking at, you know, the story we're talking about out in California. A couple, 22 people got arrested. You know, if the media doesn't report on this, we never hear about it out here in Pennsylvania. We never hear about what happens across the country without having a media structure that values news. So I guess the question that I then have is, you know, what do we do and where do we go from here?
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of things that we're working on sort of all in parallel. But one thing that we're really excited about Prometheus is low power FM radio, because there are a lot of people who would like to be doing news in their communities and would like to be making their own media, but aren't in a situation where they could own a giant radio station. But they are in a situation where they could own, you know, a small non-commercial radio station. They could reach everybody in their town with it, and then everyone in their town could be making their own news and getting their own news and hearing things that are really relevant to them.
Well, what is low-power FM? I mean, other than the obvious name.
Right.
What is a low-power FM station?
Low-power FM, technically speaking, is just a class of radio station that the FCC created. They created it back in 2000. It's not a new idea. When radio started and was first taking off in this country, most stations were low-power. And then they just started getting bigger and kept getting bigger. And eventually it got to a point where if you wanted to get a license of a radio station legally, it couldn't be a low-power station. It had to be a fairly big station. So there was this movement of micro radio broadcasters who said, we think it's really important for our freedom of speech to be able to do radio in sort of small bits. And they started doing things like 10 and 100-watt radio stations. So like radio stations that use less than the power of a light bulb. And they said, if we can't do it legally, we're just going to do it illegally. And they did that for a while until the FCC finally said, okay, we see that you're going to do this anyway. We'll just make it legal. They created a new class called LPFM, and it was limited to 100 watts, which in most cases will get you about 5 miles out, so it's about big enough to reach a small town. And was also limited to nonprofit organizations doing non-commercial radio.
So you can do it, because one of the knocks that I've heard against is you can't get into areas like, say, Philadelphia or New York. Is that true?
As it stands right now, you can't. When the service was originally created, there were a lot of possibilities to get into towns. And shortly after it was created, a lot of the bigger broadcasters started fighting it pretty hard. And one thing they did was convince Congress to change the rules about where you could put low-power FM stations on the dial. And so Congress made a new law that made those rules a lot stricter, and all of the people who had applied for stations in and around the bigger cities just got cut out of the mix. So right now there's a law in Congress or a law moving through Congress that would actually reverse those rules and make it so that thousands more stations could go on the air, especially those in urban areas.
Because the idea of having a democracy is having as many voices as possible. That's the great thing. You know, Ronald Reagan used to say that our power is our ideas. But if you've only got a handful of people owning the media structure or the ability to get your message or your idea out, I don't know that that's great for democracy.
Exactly. And one of the beautiful things about low-power FM is the diversity of stations that cropped up when they started licensing them. So there were church stations, there were high school stations, there were environmental groups doing radio stations, there were labor unions with radio stations, just all kinds of stuff that you weren't hearing from as much before it started.
And to me, it's a great organizing tool. It's a way to get people in the community excited around ideas. I mean, here in Pennsylvania, we're fighting this Marcellus Shale thing. To me, if you had these kind of low-power things, you could actually get real news in your community of how you're being affected by it.
Yeah, and when you do it at that sort of scale, it stops being a one-way tool, and it really starts being a two-way tool where there's room for the radio station to do things and get feedback and then bring in people from the community who have more things to say.
Yeah, I mean, in using it for change. And look, you know, a lot of people are in favor of drilling for Marcellus Shale. Some people are not. It's a good place to have that discussion.
Yeah, exactly.
So if someone wanted to do this, let's say, you know, we wanted to start our own low-power FM, how would one go about it?
Well, the first thing would be to support the Local Community Radio Act, which is in Congress right now. Because if that doesn't pass, there just won't be as many places where you can do this, and there might not be a new chance to get a license. So that's step one. And if this bill passes through Congress, the next step is the FCC offers radio licenses in windows. So it's not like getting a driver's license where you just wait until you're ready and you go in and you fill out some paperwork. You actually have to kind of keep up with this and see when they give notice that there will be an application window.
And that's what you guys do at Prometheus Radio Project.
Exactly. So you can always take a look at our website. I think you said it before, but it's PrometheusRadio.org, and we'll be notifying everyone we can when there's a new window. And you need to be with a nonprofit organization, and there's some paperwork to fill out to apply for a license. There's a little bit of engineering work to do, but not too much. In most cases, people can do it themselves and not have to hire an engineer. And when the window opens up, usually you get a couple months notice before the window, and then the FCC says, okay, it's time, and you get something like something as short as 5 days where you can submit your application. And then you wait a while, and then they tell you if you got an application, and then you build a radio station.
And how much money are we talking here? I mean, I've seen some people who have had their station raisings $20,000 to $50,000. Does that seem about right?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of low power stations built in the $10,000 to $20,000 range. It's possible to do it cheaper. It's also possible to do it for a lot more. I'm sure you could spend $100,000 on a studio if you wanted to, but it's really what people have to work with. And it's pretty easy to start small. You could get on the air with, I don't know, a CD player, a microphone, a mixer, a transmitter that costs a few hundred dollars.
And this nonprofit thing, I mean, if I remember right, are there any requirements on the nonprofits, like time of being around a certain amount of time? Because I know some of my friends, the last time this came up, had considered going through the licensing process and finding a nonprofit status organization was very difficult.
Mm-hmm. So there are very few requirements. You can be a state incorporated nonprofit, so you don't have to be a 501c3. I don't believe there's a restriction on how long you've been out, but there is a preference. So if you apply for a station and someone else applies in the same town and the FCC has to choose, if you've been around for, I think it's 2 years, then you have a better chance of getting a station.
Yeah, that's what I think you said. Can you share a story or two maybe of some things that you've been a part of in people doing this?
Sure, yeah. One thing that we do at Prometheus is what we call radio station barn raisings. So we do this in a tradition similar to the Amish barn raising tradition where you build a barn, but instead of building a barn, you build a radio station. And we really do it as a training tool and a movement building tool. So when we're working with an organization that has a lot of excitement and a little bit of experience organizing big events, but we'll offer to partner with them and put on a weekend-long event where we get a couple hundred people from all over the country, sometimes out of the country, to come together for a weekend. And that's where we do most of the work of building a studio. We usually put up a tower and an antenna, and at the end of the weekend, we flip the switch and start the radio station. We also take that time to do a lot of training. So aside from the training that you have by going and wiring up a studio, you could also go to a workshop on interviewing people for the radio, a workshop on editing audio, a workshop on how to govern your radio station. And we just see that as an opportunity for people to learn from each other and people to be building a network so that when we leave, it's not just a radio station that has a couple of engineers they can call when they have questions, but they have a couple hundred people from around the country who they can ask questions.
Oh, that sounds like you're building a great network there, and it sounds exciting. I wish my friends would have gone through with it and pushed on when they were talking about it a couple of years back. But it sounds like you guys do great work there at the Prometheus Radio Project. The trainings sound fantastic. If you want more information, PrometheusRadio.org is the website. Also, you can go to our site at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Maggie's name, and it'll take you right there. Maggie, I appreciate your time, and keep up the great work there.
All right. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Wow. Another astonishing scientific breakthrough has been made. The benefit is something that can be identified just about by everybody, exulted Neil Carter, who helped produce this long-awaited advance for humankind. Is it a cancer cure? No, bigger than that. Is it a free, clean, perpetual source of energy? No, bigger even than that. What we have here is, are you ready? Apple slices that don't turn brown. Is this fabulous or what? Non-browning apple slices, another marvel from the biotechnology profiteers who love to mess with the genetic makeup of the world's food supply. And this is truly a global accomplishment. The science of non-browning was pioneered in potatoes by Australian gene splicers who licensed it to Carter, a Canadian peddler of apple trees who hopes that American apple growers will now rip out their old-fashioned natural orchards and plant these biotech wonders of modern science. But it's going to be a hard sell. Genetically modified, said the head of Washington State's Apple Commission. That's a bad word in our industry. He's referring to the fact that consumers routinely reject foods they know to be altered. In fact, consumers are demanding more organic production, not stuff from a gene factory. Also, Carter could not have chosen a worse product to turn into a lab rat. Apples are the very symbol of nutrition and health, a perfect snack for children. Why mess with it? Besides, mothers know that a little lemon water is all it takes to keep apple slices from browning. This is Jim Hightower saying, this technology has no benefit for consumers, but it could fatten the bottom line of big box retailers, allowing them to sell old, inferior apples that look fresh only because they're still white. To learn more, call the Center for Food Safety, 202-547-9359. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you've got something on your mind, question, comment. Also, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Well, they still got tickets available if you're interested. If you want to go to Tom Corbett's inaugural events, $150 a head. $150 a head. It's going to be January 18th at 7:30 p.m. at the Pennsylvania Farm Show Complex and Exposition Center. Again, you can go there by going to CorbettCauleyInaugural.com. And no, I'm not going to bother putting a link on our website for $150 a head. I don't know anybody in our listening area who's dumb enough to pay that. Maybe what they should do instead of charging $150 a head to the corporate titans who are going to go there, maybe charge each one of them $1,500 and donate that to the tax to our budget crisis. That would be a great idea, don't you think? Maybe some of those folks that are coming in there who are going to make planning. It's amazing, amazing stuff. Let's go to the phone lines. I got James on line two. How are we doing tonight, James?
Pretty good. I've had a brief encounter with Prometheus Radio. I was at a job fair in Philly a couple of years ago. I liked what they were doing. I actually thought they collapsed.
No, they've been doing good work. I mean, the reality is you heard a lot from them when the issue was hot. And now, you know, as she said, you know, they're still doing some stuff, but it's about training. And I think some of the training sounded great.
Well, I just wanted to just let you know that there, you know, there's other ways to accomplish. I mean, not to denigrate or bring down what Prometheus is doing, but, you know, me being the technical person I am, there's a lot of tools on the computer that you could use to do something very similar to what Prometheus is doing. There's a program called Opera Unite that I've worked and played around on and off with, but there are other means, and I personally think that even with all this about net neutrality, I still think that the internet is the best way for the grassroots to get things done.
I think it's a way. You know, I look at this, the low power FM, and it's another one of those. If you were building your perfect model, I think the low power FM for your local community stuff, the online stuff is great, so you reach a lot larger audience. I think it's all part of, it's all just another arrow in the quiver, if you will.
And I mean, I'll agree with you on that. I do think that there is a need for what I like to call a micromedia, and I do believe that, you know, it's got to be blogs, podcasts. Did you get my text, didn't you?
Yes. I don't get texts, but I usually get your Facebook posts.
Oh, well, never mind. I'll be in touch with you otherwise.
Okay.
But I was going to, I'll make the suggestion in private.
All right, good deal, James. I appreciate the call, as always, buddy. Good to hear from you.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I mean, you know, to be honest, I'm in favor of what Prometheus does. I think they do good work. Let's go to line one. I've got Ike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Ike?
Hey, Rick. I'll tell you what, man. If you want some real entertainment, just turn on C-SPAN and watch these idiots on the House floor and these Republicans, man. They are shameless.
Is Boehner crying again?
You know their new tactic?
What's that?
Now it's a $3.5 trillion tax increase on families and small businesses that will crush the economy.
Well, where did they pull that out of?
Well, where they pull everything out of. Come on.
And they reached around behind them and popped it right out, huh?
Exactly. And there was a newsflash across the screen. They pulled the $1.1 trillion spending bill off the floor of the Senate.
Yeah, I mean, you look at this and you go, Democrats had better grow a spine and soon.
Well, honestly, you know, I'll tell you, I've been one of these people out here that's been saying ever since we went into Iraq, and I continue to see them giving billions to Pakistan, you know, to India, and all this other garbage they've been doing. I've been saying for a long time, and I guess I probably am going to get what I've been asking for. But you know what? If you want to waste $1 trillion, waste it on us. Write us a check. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. What I've been saying we should be doing is putting people back to work. The government should be the employer of last resort. That's a great way of using $1 trillion.
Exactly. And I'll be honest with you, as somebody that's been unemployed thanks to outsourcing and bad trade agreements and insourcing of cheap and sometimes illegal labor, you know, and what's happened in the construction industry, hey, I'd be more than happy to go out. Of course, I wouldn't work for the amount of money that I'm getting on unemployment, but you want to jack it up to a living wage, you know, and put me on a make-work project, hey, babe, I'm ready to go. You know what I mean?
And most people that I know who are unemployed feel the same way. They want. And look, I truly believe there are therapeutic qualities to work that are good for society. So I've always said, you know, if we're going to hand somebody $3 to, you know, to be long-term unemployed, why don't we give them $500 and let them go to work and let them have some self-worth? Because I got to tell you,
well,
I remember myself being unemployed for a long period of time. You start to question if you're ever going to get a job.
Well, yeah, I'm the eternal optimist. You know, come hell or high water, you know, of course, I'm a person that's lived under a bridge. I've lived in an abandoned car. I mean, I've been as down as low as you can go. So because of that, and by the way, I highly recommend it for everybody. Because once you've done and been where I've been, nothing scares you anymore. You know you can handle whatever they throw at you. But I guess, you know, as a matter of fact, you could probably pull that out of your quiver, you know. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. But
yeah. Good point.
I got a friend, and I was in Australia for about 3 months, a few years, I don't know, 5-6 years back. And here's the deal. You know, over there, they've got a thing called Centrelink, and it's like their social security, you know, system here.
Mm-hmm.
And this cat, you know, he had trouble with his car, and, you know, he didn't have enough money coming in, and he needed to do repairs and this and that. And the other thing, he went down to the Centrelink office, and he put in a request for, I forget how much it was, I think it was about $4,000 or $5,000. You know, and he explained what was going on and all this. Guess what? They cut him a check. They took it straight out of his retirement fund, you know? And I'm like, wow, what a novel idea that is.
Yeah, what worries me about that is that what happens when you get to retirement. I wish they, you know, for me, I'm a firm believer of government as the employer of last resort.
Yeah, and as far as retirement goes, maybe I'm misguided. You know, maybe this is just the way that I've been brought up or the way that I've looked at life, growing up with the threat of nuclear annihilation and diving under my desk and whatever. And I might be wrong, but at 52 years old here in a few days, I'll be honest with you, the life that I've run and the way that I've gone and the trade that I've been in, I'll be honest with you, brother, I ain't going to make retirement. And beyond that, I've got my own DNR, you know, when the time comes. I just have a different way of looking at it. Actually, I'm kind of anxious to go anyway because I'm curious. I'm a curious sort. I'd like to know what's on the other side. But when it comes right down to it, the last place you're going to find me is in a hospital hooked up to a chemotherapy or anything else. You know, when the time comes, I'm going to punch my own ticket, brother. Because I've watched the medical community bankrupt both my parents. They bankrupted me. I lost $500,000 and my business. And I've already made up my mind. They're not getting their hands on me. They can forget it.
I'm not going to be here. Honest with you, I know people and a lot of folks who feel the same way. You know, in fact, it's kind of deja vu. I just had this conversation with a friend not too long ago.
Really?
So it's kind of one of those things.
And Rick, I appreciate it. And again, you know, for your listeners out there, I mean, don't turn off the show here. But you know, if you can multitask like I do, I'm just telling you, these Republicans are shameless. I swear, they are just getting up there in bald-faced lying. Oh, and by the way, it was so entertaining with John Cornyn today. Oh man, I fell off on the floor laughing at that boy about the earmarks.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a scream. But hey, Rick, I appreciate the show, buddy. Just keep plugging away, bro. The worm will turn eventually.
I appreciate the call. Thanks for listening, and call back anytime, buddy.
All right, buddy.
Thank you. You know, maybe Boehner's crying again. But then again, what doesn't Boehner cry at? And you know what's amazing to me? Did you see that interview he did with Leslie Stahl? I think it was on 60 Minutes.
Where
he just bawled all the time. And what I liked is Leslie Stahl goes to his wife, does he do that all the time? And boy, did you see her just zero, like she's the one with the set, not crybaby over there. But I just thought that was funny.
Well, his wife tried to cover for him. Sure. There was a lot of pressure on him.
But here's the thing. You know, he's talking about education. I just want to educate the children.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a look at his voting record on child issues. Not the greatest pro-education guy. Not the greatest pro-help the lower-income child guy. And, you know, he tells the story, and this is kind of weird. Tells the story, you know, how his father owned a bar, and, you know, he was in there working, and he came from basically nothing, he
talks about the American dream.
And it's a dream that I push, because, you know, I got to be honest, I live sort of the same route. Grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland, struggled my entire life, but I'm doing all right. I'm better than I ever thought I would be in my lifetime because of the opportunities that I've had and, honestly and truthfully, the fact that my work was rewarded by having a collective bargaining agreement, by my 21-year membership in the Teamsters Union. That's how I was able to afford a lot of the things that I had. Look, I had some really crummy jobs starting out that paid virtually nothing, minimum wage or just above. And the sad reality is that's what we're turning into in this country. Two classes of people, the billionaires, the Goldman Sachs folks who are taking $20 million in bonuses this year, and the people who are struggling to make ends meet by making minimum wage. That, to me, folks, that does not make the American dream.
You know, the irony with Boehner, and I've heard other people say it, and I do believe it's true. If that would have been Pelosi, they would have been all over her. Well, she's just this wimpy, wimpy, weak woman, crying all the time. What do you expect? And maybe that's why people don't hate her, because she's really this very strong woman. I think she's a good leader. And the fact that she doesn't break down, she doesn't act like a, quote, unquote, typical woman, I think a lot of Republicans hate her for that. But I can guarantee you, if she'd start crying numerous times on national TV, the Republicans would be all over her. Remember what happened with, what's his name? He ran president when he had that whoop. Remember that? That emotional. Remember in 2004?
Howard Dean.
I mean, that was something very simple. It was very human. And yet they demonized him, and I'll still never understand why. He dropped in the pro. Yeah, he was just being exuberant.
No, what it was is his voice was shot.
Well, okay. But for some reason, he just dropped like a rock.
Look,
in the
mainstream media made him out to be a doofus. And we the doofus idiot base, the people in this country who are not smart enough to realize the guy was talking, you know, 20 hours a day for weeks at a time. His voice gave out. What's wrong with us is that we don't think. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
If you rented at work, do you think you need an attorney? You probably don't. To protect yourself, you do need to know your rights. Retain control. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one? Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well? Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike. Call him at 243-3211. You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too. So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings. That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got a
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. One of these days, I will text. I haven't. It's one of those things. I'm somebody who just picks up the phone and calls and says, hey, how you doing? But I think I'm going to get into this texting thing one of these days. Who knows? Anyway, today the big news, the Democrats maybe a little spying, you think, on this this tax bill? Evidently,
a lot of spying.
It's been pulled.
It's been pulled.
You know, they want something on this estate tax.
Yep.
And I got to be honest with you. There's part of me that says, just do away with the estate tax. Completely do away with it. And make it income. And tax it as income. So we no longer have the estate tax. So we no longer have to pick on, have it perceived that we're picking on the rich people. I say it's income. In fact, I say everything that you get, whatever comes in, is income. We shouldn't have capital gains, and we shouldn't have all these ways to protect the very wealthy from paying taxes. Every penny that you get, you know, like when I get my bank statement at the end of the year, it says, Rick, you made $22 in interest off of one of your CDs. I have to declare that. It's not capital gains for me. But I think all income should be income taxed at income rates. This way we don't have these problems.
Well, what the liberals wanted, the progressives wanted, if you remember, let's regress a little bit. Mitch McConnell said, well, now remember when we sent this bill, we expect no changes. Remember that? He's saying, and any changes, deals off. Well, the liberal Democrats are saying basically, you know, they're sticking their nose out at Mitch McConnell, and they're saying, hey, look, he's not God, he's not king. What they want is a discussion. They want a discussion on the issue and then a vote on that issue and then a separate vote on the bill, which I think is smart. That's what they want. Will they get it? I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing. Some of the liberals are finally showing that at least some Democrats have a spine. DeFazio and Wiener. These are some of the things they're looking at. They want to redirect some of the additional revenue from the higher estate tax to pay for infrastructure investment. There you go. I think that's pretty innovative. Plus, this is a real shot to the Republicans, and I'm sure they'll vote this down. They also want to use some of that money for that $250 for the Social Security recipients, which they denied in their vote a week before. So, you know, I mean, they're thinking, they're trying to look at innovative ways to maybe use some of that added income that they could get if they would agree to these changes in the inheritance tax. And at least some people in the Democratic Party are having some spine. And it's like DeFazio said. He said, look, this is our last chance, this Congress. This is our last chance to stand up. And his exact words, and I agree with him, he said, his exact words were, we want to discuss issues which we haven't been discussing and the American people haven't heard. And he's exactly right. Why haven't they talked about these issues before? So, you know, hats off to the progressives in the Democratic Party. They're showing some real spine and initiative, and I think some of those ideas are innovative and they're good ideas. Will they pass? Probably not. But at least we need to start talking about them.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, I still think we go back. We have to simplify things with the tax code. And we should give the Republicans their big victory. We will do away with the estate tax. But you will pay income tax on every penny of it. That's the right way to do it in my mind. Stop with the estate tax, because what that does is it divides us, and I'm not fond of anything that divides us, because you know we all think that someday we're going to be the next Andrew Carnegie or the next Bill Gates, and that when we're 16 years old, we take that minimum wage job, and by the time we turn 18, hey, we got a quarter raise maybe. By the time you're 21, you got a dollar raise. By the time you're 25, you got a couple dollar raise. And you think that it's going to be an upward trajectory your entire life. Well, you know what? At a certain point, you're going to stop. You're going to hit that ceiling. But we still think we're going to keep going up. And we still have this, you know, I remember doing some organizing work when I lived in Cleveland. And the this machine shop, you know, they were saying, look, you know, I'm only going to be here a couple of years. This is a stepping stone to something better. And 20 years later, they're still there. But what was interesting is they didn't want to make their conditions better at that point. Oh, this is just temporary. And I said, well, why not make it better for you while it's temporary so the next guy who comes along doesn't have to fight this battle again? And to me, that makes sense. You know, you may think, hey, you're going to make $200 million a year. At some point, I think by having a fair, reasonable tax code, you make it possible for other folks to get up into that realm. And you know what's interesting about this? You know, we're talking about giving hundreds of billions of dollars away to the top 1 or 2%, or in the estate tax realm, you know, even a smaller number than that. But yet, here again, Republicans are standing in the way of passing this reasonable bill to help the folks who rushed into the burning buildings on 9/11, absolutely refused to do anything to help those folks who are now suffering from illnesses. And I look at today, you had a group of nine 9/11 first responders. They went to Washington. They're going to lobby Congress. Weren't met with a very welcome surprise. They found themselves with a police escort, thanks to Olympia Snow. And, you know, I go, really? Why not let them have their say? But no, this is one of those things that bothers me. Yeah, because this is the kind of stuff you expect to happen with corporations. When folks want to protest, J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan Chase, there. They want to make it known that they're angry, that they're foreclosing on people. And they go to their establishment, they're arrested. When we go to our house, which is the U.S. Capitol, when we go to our house, we shouldn't be arrested. We shouldn't be escorted out. We shouldn't be. And for me, this would be another one of those moments where we should be taking to the streets. Because these are the heroes. Remember what they told us? These are the heroes. George Bush wrapped his arms all around them, wore the hat, had the jacket. Boy, you know, just like when he landed on the aircraft carrier with the sock in his pants. What a great photo op. One of those nice picture to put on Mom's, on Bab's mantle. Little George playing dress up. But when it comes time to take care of those folks, when it comes time to stand up and admit your responsibility, they don't want any part of that. And I look at the quote of the guy yesterday we talked about, who said, we don't want to get into too much liability. You know, we want to help them, but we really don't want the liability because, we just don't want to. There are other ways of doing it to where we're not liable. In fact, what Senator Thune,
yes.
What Thune said, and again, it's one of those things that amazes me. He said it doesn't cost, he believes that they should get something done that doesn't cost quite as much. We want to do it on the cheap. We want to screw those people where we can, where it doesn't provide as much exposure, as much liability. And there are some things in the bill that can be improved upon. Oh yeah, like chopping the help for these folks.
Still have one problem with that argument, right? There have been attempts since 06 to get bills passed on this issue. I mean, come on. Don't tell me that you didn't have the chance to get exactly what you wanted done. He was being embarrassed on national radio by a very well-known talk show host in New York, and he was looking for an excuse, something to tell the public to hide from, which was pretty much BS.
Well, not just pretty much BS. They use these folks as props. You know, like Bush used to do with the troops behind him, use them as props. But they don't want to take care of them. And that's, to me, and I've asked this before, if we don't take care of the people that we call heroes, who will be the next generation of hero?
Well, you know, you talked about the inheritance tax. Do you realize the reason they first introduced it?
Well, absolutely. The reason they didn't want the mass accumulation of wealth, because it was bad for democracy. It was bad to have a handful of robber barons, a handful of extraordinarily wealthy people who could single-handedly chart the course of entire communities. I mean, that is...
Well, that was one of the results, but from what I've been told, and you correct me if I'm wrong, originally... It was passed to cover the cost of the war. Which war was it? Was it Spanish-American War or First World War? I'm not sure. But initially it was passed to cover a good part of the cost of the war. Now, were there a lot of good benefits out of that for society? Absolutely. And if in fact that was the case, and I have no doubts that that was the case, the irony is we basically have two wars. So why shouldn't the very wealthy, who have benefited greatly from this country, why shouldn't they pay just a little bit more to cover the cost of that war and for other things? But the cost of the war is becoming crippling. And somebody's got to pay for it.
And, here's the thing. I mean, if what you're talking about is one of the worst economic situations in the history of the country, don't you think the folks who can afford it should be asked to? Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We'll be right back at
remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, you can check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, right there for your viewing pleasure. Also, we do a podcast with Apple's iTunes. You can listen to it right at the website there at thericksmithshow.com. If you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, I do enjoy the email that I get, and I do the discussions as well. Also, hungryandhomeless.org. I know a lot of websites, a lot of stuff getting out there. But we are going to be starting our Hungry and Homeless for the holidays event September, this Saturday. I wish it was September. Oh, how I wish. Supposed to be 30 degrees on Saturday. This Saturday at noon, we will be kicking it off, and we will be in that parking lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street in Carlisle, until Friday the 24th at noon, when I'm no longer homeless and I can go home to my family.
And you're no longer the chef.
Yeah, I'll no longer be the chief chef. Also, yes, don't forget, a $25 donation gets you your deluxe accommodations. You can have the box right next to Jake. Now, I'm not responsible if he keeps you up all night snoring, but that's your problem.
Well,
also bring your own blankets because I don't do laundry, and we will give you the most delicious gourmet meals. Maybe a bagel, none of that stuff you put on it, just a plain bagel, and maybe a hot dog.
Well, if you show up and you want to rent one of our boxes, I think we could consider giving them a deduction if they showed up with some cookies or pies. I think that's appropriate.
All donations are tax deductible. Also, if you want to watch from the luxury of your home, we're going to be trying to put this on the web so you can watch the entire event. Francis Fukuyama. Name sounds familiar, doesn't it? He was a neocon during the Reagan years and one of Bush's guys. He wrote an article in the American Interest magazine called Left Out. He says, quote, "Scandalous as it may sound to the ears of Republicans schooled in Reaganomics, one critical measure of the health of a modern democracy is its ability to legitimately extract taxes from its own elite. The most dysfunctional societies in the developing world are those whose elites succeed either in legally exempting themselves from taxation or taking advantage of lax enforcement to evade them, thereby shifting the burden of public expenditure onto the rest of society." You look at Greece. Greece is a perfect example. They have a high tax rate. They have no enforcement. Pennsylvania, they tell us, it has one of the highest state income taxes for state corporate taxes in the country. Yet three-quarters of the corporations in this state pay nothing because we've given them a nice loophole to move their profits to Delaware through a P.O. box. So I look at this guy, a neocon, mind you, saying, look, we need to start looking at taxing the wealthy. And it's not, you know, you hear on the right-wing talkers, oh, well, they're going to soak the rich. No, we're not talking about soaking the rich. We're talking about being able to provide the services that a society needs to have the framework to become rich. If you have dirt roads, you're not going to get your product to market. If you don't have an adequate rail service, not going to happen. If you don't have a good education system, sorry, you're not going to have decent employees. Down the line. But what's going on is the right has really figured out how to use this tax issue to keep people stupid. And the question is what are taxes for? Why do we tax things? Well, we tax people so we can have a military, so we can have a police department, so we can have a fire department, so we can have schools, so we can have hospitals, so that when someone does something wrong, we can put them in jail and have people watching over them. And I keep hearing this nonsense. Well, we need to cut the size of government. We need to freeze their pay. So yesterday, I think it was yesterday, when the border guard got killed on the border, you wanted to cut his pay. Those people walking up and down the southern border there. You want to cut their pay, right? The people who were watching the prisoners in the federal prisons, you want to cut their pay. The people who were watching over you, helping keeping the streets safe, you want to cut their pay. You know, I'm so sick and tired of hearing this nonsense. Oh, yeah, what we need to do is we need to cut that public sector spending, and we need to screw those unions. And you know what we've done? You know what we've done in this country? We've created a tax code that's allowed the very wealthy, the Wall Street crowd, to evade paying any of those taxes. You and I pay a much higher tax than Warren Buffett pays as a percentage of our incomes. You know, look, and I've said this before. I think we need to go back to a good socialist president's tax code. And it started, and one of our callers rightfully corrected me over the weekend by saying, no, it started under Franklin Roosevelt, but it took head during Eisenhower's years. And we always looked at the 50s, Jake, as that golden time of America. We had a top marginal rate in the golden years of 92%. Now, understand, nobody paid that. Nobody paid 92% of their income to the federal government. What they did is they used that money. They didn't hoard it. They used it. They built universities. They built museums. They used that money for charitable gain, for philanthropic aims.
feeding the poor, those type of things. That's what I advocate for. Use that money. Get it into our economy and get it moving. Instead of saying, here's a huge tax cut. Here's a whole bunch of money. Please do something constructive with it. Well, we know what they're going to do with it. They're going to create jobs with that money in China. They're going to create jobs here because there's a better return there.
And the question, I thought about that concept, Rick, and it's just like some of these professional athletes, How much is enough? If you're the Carnegies or the Rockefellers, and let's say you have a choice. Let's say that the family had a choice. Well, we can make $2 billion this year and not pay any income tax, or we can make $1 million. And if they had the power, which would be better? I guess my point is, at some point, the greater good, and we've lost that. Oh, my God. Have we lost that in the last, especially in the last 10 years, but probably the advent of Ronald Reagan. We have lost this concept of the greater good. What does the greater good mean? It means what's best for the nation and its people.
Yeah, I go back to what one of our friends said. That his father during World War II was paying 95% of his income to the British government, and he was proud to be able to do it. That really struck me. But you look at this agreement that the White House and the Republicans have, this deal that they've cooked up, and for those of you who are working for a living, the $20,000 to $30,000 a year range. You're going to get about $20 a week under this deal. For those of us in the $50,000 to $75,000 range, we're going to get about $44 a week. If you're making $200,000 to $500,000 a year, you're going to see about $211 a week. For those folks in the top 2%, making $500,000 to $1 million, you're going to maybe about $479. And this is where here's where the Bushians take over. If you make more than $1 million, if you take more than that, the amount that this deal is going to give to you, $2,686 per week. So 0.3% of the population, 0.3% is going to take that much of the gain, 31%. I mean, stop and think about this. I mean, we're getting the shaft here. You and I, the folks who work for a living, and the majority of us, the vast majority of us, are in the $20,000 to $75,000 range. The vast majority. Because you're looking at $250,000 and above, that's the top 2%.
And let's be honest. I mean, these people, they're wealthy. And they know how to live. You know what that means? You know what that extra $2,000 a week means? Maybe another Bentley. Maybe after a couple of years of getting these nice fat tax breaks, maybe we'll buy a home.
I wish
maybe
they
we'll
would.
Buy another home. Or like a lot of them do, maybe we'll put a lot of it overseas where we can avoid taxes totally.
That's the problem. I wish they would buy stuff. I wish this idea that if we give it to them, they will spend it. I wish that were possible. I wish it were possible that they went out and they bought a new Cadillac or they bought a new Mercedes or they bought new clothes or they ate out every night. That would be great. The reality is they're building future wealth. To me, that's the problem. And I don't want to fund my demise. I don't want to hand out all this money and know, and I, this is what I absolutely know, that they're going to take it and do what's in their own best self-interest, and that is seek more profit. And more profit is overseas. Because, here's the thing. You can get cheap exploitable labor. You can bring that product back here, and you can sell it right here for the same price that if you made it here. But you know what? There's a lot more profit. You could build it here, make 100% profit. But if you make it over there, you could probably get 400% profit. And that's what it's about for them. It's not about democracy. It's not about a love of this country. It's about how much can I stick in my pocket. If you remember during the go-go 80s, the one who dies with the most toys wins. We're right back after this.
Controversial, thought-provoking, opinionated. Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. As Christmas approaches, job news around the country is in flux. In Bensalem, Pennsylvania, prescription drug company Express Scripts closed its doors on 365 workers Wednesday morning. The company announced plans to close the plant 8 months ago, citing new developments in technology, making the plant obsolete. Workers complained that the company never offered them the opportunity to transfer. Under a severance agreement reached with the Service Employees International Union, the laid-off workers will receive a lump payment of $10,000, 5 months of health care, and a week's pay for each year of service. Meanwhile, Colorado and Indiana have both received positive jobs news thanks to Abound Solar and a $400 million federal loan from the Department of Energy. The company plans to hire 1,000 workers at a production plant in Indiana and an additional 200 workers in Longmont, California. $100 million of the federal loan will go toward expanded production at the Colorado facility, and the rest will mostly go toward opening a new manufacturing facility in Tipton, Indiana. A surprising factoid regarding the production of the solar panels is that the majority are going to be exported. Germany is currently the leading country when it comes to adopting solar power, and 90% of Abound's panels will go to that country. In New York City news, a panel of judges ruled on Tuesday that the Metropolitan Transit Authority is obliged to give subway and bus employees a 3% raise next year, as well as lower health care contributions. The MTA had made claims that a contract agreement reached in arbitration was unaffordable and has been making legal challenges, which culminated with Tuesday's appellate division ruling. Health care contributions will be reduced to 1.5% of earnings and doesn't include overtime. This week has been big for privacy and new technologies. The Third Circuit Court of Appeals on Wednesday denied a request by the federal government to reconsider a decision regarding access to cell phone records that reveal locations. Under the previous ruling, the government will need to obtain a probable cause search warrant to receive cell phone records. That decision reflects a Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals decision on Tuesday, which requires the federal government to obtain a search warrant before seizing emails from service providers. According to the Electric Frontier Foundation, the court ruled that email users can assume the same privacy expectations with email as they would with phone calls and postal mail. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, with the Christmas holiday just around the corner, with these great big tax cuts that may be coming our way, Tiffany and Company, the world's number two luxury jeweler, is doing very well. Thank you very much. Their earnings show a 27% increase. And what that did is it kicked off a rally that helped their stock price triple. And then last Monday, the White House announced this big tax cut deal that's going to add another $360,000 in discretionary income for the richest 0.1%. So Tiffany and Company, they're looking pretty good. They're hoping to sell some of those $4,800 lizard skin handbags that they've got for sale in the recognizably robin's egg blue color. So there you go. You got an extra $4,800 laying around. Help out Tiffany and Company. Man, I'll tell you, I've never seen a $4,800 purse. Just like I've never seen a $16,000 shower curtain. Let's go to the phones. I got Gary on line one. How are we doing tonight, Gary?
We're doing all right, Rick. Good to hear from you.
You going
to
take that tax cut and buy a nice $4,800 handbag for your wife?
You know, I'm going to buy a couple. You know, they're small, so I figure for under $10,000, I can buy two Christmas gifts. What a deal, huh? I wanted to talk to you a little bit about where we are. I mean, where you and I and where middle America seems to be, and what I would like to see happen. And I'm doing this myself because I think it's important. I think it's anyone who finds themselves where we are today probably needs to do this more than anything else. And that's be very basic, and that's get involved. And I mean get involved where you can do some good. I mean, we can sit around and grouse about what the feds are doing on a daily basis. My God, they give us enough to chew about every day. But my point is this. We cannot, and I don't believe that we can personally affect change in Washington. We can do it through our vote, and that's certainly one way. But to try and to persuade a congressman or a senator or an elected official, I should say a politician, to make changes, what's right for the constituents and what's right for middle America is really become an impossibility. So my point is this. We need to get involved, and we need to get involved at a level in which we can actually implement change. And that's at our local level. That's at our school boards, at our towns and our villages and our cities and counties. You don't have to be a multimillionaire to run for a school board position or a village or a town. And I've been monitoring and attending our county board meetings on a regular basis and getting involved at least at some level, at a basic level. It's my belief that this country was started at the bottom and, you know, I hate to use the term grassroots, but it's where it has to start.
Absolutely agree.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier, I was listening, your 21 years as a Teamster, and you enjoyed the benefits of that. I got a couple of years on you. I'm a 33-year veteran of the Teamsters and enjoying a hard-earned pension. And you're right. My wages were well above the wages of the other folks that did the kind of work that I did, and my health care benefits and my pension. And those are all things that came from a contract. And people look at that and say, well, you know, it's the labor unions that are hurting this country. And I have to vehemently disagree. It's the labor unions that are helping this country. I enjoyed, and my family enjoyed, and my children enjoyed an education and the fruits of labor because of those contracts that were negotiated and signed. This is an important piece. Signed by both parties.
Yep.
You know, if the employer didn't want to do it, he never had to do it. So, you know, we look back at those, and you mentioned earlier, and I'm mentioning it now, those 33 years of hard labor that I put into them for that benefit was the trade-off, and I received a generous return for that. But my point again is I started out in that company and moved along and became a steward and with luck and hard work actually became an agent and an officer of our local union. And that's where it starts. It starts with you getting involved. I got involved in my job site, and over the years it paid off to where I could actually implement and actuate change for working men and women. And you can do that. You can do it at a local level. You can't do it in Congress, and you can't do it in the Senate, but you can do it as a member of a county legislature or a school board or a village legislator. Run for a mayor. Run for the mayor of your local town, no matter how big or how small it is. People will listen to you. If you're talking straight and you're not trying to pull the wool over their eyes, and you can you can affect change at our level of change.
Yep.
You know, I had one of the guys that I worked for who was an organizer used to say to me, if you want to try and organize a location, you organize a location that you can affect, whether negatively or positively. And, you know, again, trying to change our federal government from where we sit is an impossibility. But we can change our local government. And it doesn't trickle down. It trickles up.
That's exactly
right.
And
if we are able to actuate that change, we'll see a difference.
I absolutely agree. You know, one of the things I've always said, you know, it goes back to one of the old labor sayings, united we bargain, divided we beg, which is why they try and keep us so divided and why the right is so vehemently opposed to workers organizing and collective bargaining. Because they know, like you, like me, because I followed the same path. You know, I went from just a first day on the job knowing nothing about being a teamster to eventually being a steward and a delegate, because you do get involved in these things and you become active not only in your union but in your community. And the right understands this, and they don't want people active in their community, which is why they have to put their thumb on labor every chance they get.
Yeah. It's unfortunate that the administration has taken the turns that they have, because I don't believe the labor initiatives that were set forth by this administration will ever come to fruition now. I mean, it just won't happen. And especially now with a very right-sided Congress ready to take charge,
no.
That the Freedom of Choice Act is a dead issue, at least for a very long time.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, and I said it right from the beginning, it was never going to pass, but it should have been number one. It should have been right there because, you know, here's the thing. If you want an economy to grow, if you want to put money into people's pockets, don't ruin Social Security. Give them the ability to bargain for some of those profits. You know, in the third quarter of this year, the highest profit margin in the history of this country.
But, Rick, where do you hear that? I mean, other than a show like yours or from very selected locations, where are you hearing that information? What everyone is constantly bombarded with is this 9 and 10% unemployment, and that's the forefront. Where will anybody ever hear that corporate America is doing okay for itself while middle America is that. And
no,
that disparity is staggering.
I got to correct you, Gary. They're not just doing okay, man.
They're doing better than okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
They're dancing all the way to the bank, to their own banks.
I stand corrected. You're absolutely right. But where do you hear that? And why isn't that message getting out in more locations than just here? And again, some very select locations.
I mean,
you keep hammering on the fact that the Democrats are not good at politics. God, they've been at it long enough to be good, and I don't know why that is. Why aren't we able to stay on message?
Because we're wired differently. We're wired a little differently. We're wired to talk about facts. We're wired that, and I just had this conversation with somebody today. We're wired to talk about policy and be kind of wonkish and boring. Where the right, they talk in stories and narrative, and they tug at your heartstrings. They never have any details. You look at that crummy pledge, the little pledge. Oh, it was beautiful, flowery, jingoistic language. Oh, you couldn't, just oozing with Americanism and just wonderful, wonderful lobbyist written language. Didn't say anything. And the average American looked at it and said, yeah, I'm proud American. I don't know. It didn't say anything, but it's great. It's great. It's great language.
Yeah.
And that's how they're swayed. It's simplistic death tax. Brilliant messaging. But doing away with it is horrible for our country.
I agree.
And, you know, that's where we are, buddy. And the reason there aren't more programs like this one, the corporations own the media. Which is why they want to destroy the internet, which is why they don't want net neutrality, why they want to have two separate internets, one for them and then one for people like me who can't afford it.
Yeah.
That's it. I appreciate the call, buddy.
Anytime. We'll talk.
All right. You know, again, you know, that's part of this whole thing, Jake. They got the big bucks.
But he makes a good point, and it kind of ties into the theme all night. People are going to have to go to the street because, in fact, in this country right now, change is going to have to come from bottom up. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask Me Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Saturday at noon, again, we're going to be doing Hungry and Homeless for the Holidays. Come out and see us at the Giant Parking Lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street. Also, if you want to donate a couple bucks, it is tax deductible. You can go to hungryandhomeless.org and make a tax deductible donation to Project Share and Carlisle Cares. It is something that is vitally needed in our community because they do such great work here. In the Patriot today, there was a—I guess this was actually Sunday's poll. It says, "So what does 6 cents mean for a school trying to make lunch healthier for its students?" They write, "It can be the difference between buying wheat bread or white bread, or between fresh vegetables or canned, but it can't be both. Not at the same meal, evidently." While making only one of these switches would benefit students, making both would be better. That's one of the challenges facing the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act, the bill passed this month by Congress, that aims to overhaul school lunch programs with the goal of reducing childhood obesity and making sure that children receive a nutritious lunch. And I look at where my daughter goes to school. They really do a nice job. And I've got to give them credit. They've done away with the sugary drinks. They've really done a nice job with some of the food. So today was, Dad go have lunch with his daughter day. And I love taking part in that when the school offers it. So what did I bring? I brought her a one of those sugary berry drinks from McDonald's and two tacos from Taco Bell. And, you know, as I'm sitting there and I'm looking at all of the signs telling children to make healthy choices and to eat the right thing, what did dear old dad do? He brought in a sugary drink and, you know, crummy Taco Bell. But, yeah, again, it was one of those things I don't do often, and our kids don't eat fast food often. But it was still, I'm sitting there and I'm feeling kind of bad about it. In fact, I was feeling really bad about it. But anyway, you know, it was one of those things, you know, it made me feel stupid. And, you know, the principal walks by and he looks at me and he's like, you know, dude, what are you doing?
Did he give you one of those looks?
Well, you know, it was one of those look up and down, kind of going, yeah, tisk, tisk, tisk. And that's the reason that you're not educating your child from home, no. Evidently. It's one of those.
That's from your old trucker diet days.
Yeah, well, there is that. Thanks for mentioning that. I know, but the thing is, and I give the school districts credit. They didn't keep all the sugary stuff that they used to have, and it's. I think some of this legislation going forward is a good thing. I'm a firm believer in lunch programs. I'm a firm believer in breakfast programs. In fact, I'm again one of these folks who doesn't like to divide, and I think you should have it for everybody instead of, you know, if you can afford it. It should be part of the school day, but that's never going to happen in this country. Never going to happen. Anyway, I don't know if you saw this report out of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Coke and Pepsi, they sense this demand from consumers and pressure from regulators to sell more lower-calorie drinks. Some of the hottest competition between the old rivalries happened to be in sweetener laboratories. Pepsi and Coke inked deals recently with scientific outfits to find and commercialize natural sweeteners. They are also investigating enhancers that would allow scientists to use smaller amounts of sweeteners, such as sugar, derivatives of a shrub called stevia, or high fructose corn syrup. And, of course, you'll remember high fructose corn syrup here in the U.S. Is no longer called high fructose corn syrup. It's corn sugar. Remember that. It's corn sugar. Understand that, you know, the corn sugar, the high fructose corn syrup, is the most common sweetener in the U.S. And, you know, there have been studies that I've read that say, you know, look, there's a direct correlation between the advent of high fructose corn syrup and all of this childhood obesity. And while I'm in favor of, you know, look, having more nutritious meals, because we do need to do that, I think a big part of it is this additive and additives like this. And the fact that we have kids who have carpal tunnel with their thumbs playing video games. But that's another thing. And if you remember yesterday, we talked about the Save the Children people who didn't want, who now, first they wanted a soda tax, and now they don't. Why? Because Pepsi gave them some money, and Coke gave them some money, or is going to give them some money. So, you know, it's one of those things, man. And this is where parents and governments make these decisions. That's why I'm in favor of a reasonable sugar tax. Look, it's not going to stop me. An extra couple of pennies on a bottle of soda, probably not going to stop anybody. But what it'll do is it'll put some money into a pot, and as long as we use it right, it will help pay for some of the very negative side effects like diabetes.
And, of course, the right wing is all tither. Accusing those kind of programs or suggestions of programs as being the food police, government telling you what to tell your kids. If it's done right, I see nothing wrong with it. We absolutely have to do something about the childhood obesity. I mean, that's when I was growing up, that would be almost unimaginable. But you know, with the lifestyle and the way kids are brought up today, many kids, you know, because of their parents because maybe their parents don't have the money. It's their diet, but it's also part of it's the fact that they don't get enough exercise also.
Yeah, another part of it is we live in an environment where both parents generally work, and you usually, hey, let's, like I did today, and I feel bad I didn't have time to run home and grab something from home. I was in a hurry. I was in the middle of my day, and, you know, it was the quickest thing, and I was already running behind. So it was one of the, let me just stop here. I'll grab something, and I'll go.
Well, I mean, kids are kids. If the parent isn't home, maybe the mother and father aren't home, and they're left to make their own meal, and they have the choice of pizza, or they have the choice of vegetables and fruit. What do you think they're going to choose?
Let's see. I have the choice between broccoli and candy.
But don't forget fruit salad.
Yeah, but here's the thing. My son, he would take the broccoli over candy, which is really kind of weird.
Really?
Which is kind of weird. And
well,
this is one of those things
where my wife
has done the right thing by our children, because they eat vegetables. The folks that I was talking to at the lunch this afternoon, the kid won't eat anything that's green. So it's one of those things. And, you know, to me, we could use this sugar tax even to help education. There's a lot of things that could be done. I look at this report from the LA Times that Los Angeles is looking for sponsors. So if, you had a football field like they do, Nike could be the sponsor. Nike High School football field. Or if you look at what they did in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, not too long ago, they named the kitchens. This was a couple years ago. They named their kitchens the Kohler Credit Union Kitchen. We're seeing more of this. And I've talked to New Jersey, for instance, it puts advertising on the side of their school buses. My kids come home. My daughter comes home all the time with, Dad, I got a free lunch at this chain. I got a free pizza from this place. I got a free something from this place. All this corporatization, all this stuff that gets rammed down their throats. Not good, in my opinion. And this, to me, you know, the school districts are struggling because we haven't done right by them over the years. And we're saying, well, you know, let the corporations cover it. And we're going to have this debate in this state. This whole voucher thing is coming full, fast, and furious. And it's not to make education better. It's to destroy working conditions. It's to destroy teachers. Because stop and think about it. If you have a public school, a charter school, or a parochial school, bricks and mortar cost the same, electricity costs the same, books cost the same, it costs the same to educate the child. What's different?
It's funny you should bring that up. You know, today for the first time in my local community, the station I listen to, Matt Breit was on with an individual interview, and he was full throttle privatization. You know, of course, they're going to say privatize the state liquor stores, but he was going on and on and on. And think about it, with the shortage of money and the state in hock for billions of dollars, boy, that's that apple up there just waiting to be plucked. And I'm afraid Corbett's going to really bite that apple hard.
Well, he's already said he's going to. There's no.
Well, not just the obvious. What we talked about, you know, are they going to go the second and third wave?
I'm already hearing whispers, and I'm going to be calling the Catholic Church in the next couple of days to find out what their position is on the wine and spirit shops. I'm going to find their positions. What I'm hearing is that they've struck a deal. The Catholic Church will not oppose, and this is just what I'm hearing. They're not going to oppose
because of the voucher issue.
Because of the vouchers. And again, you know, to me, and we talked about it the other night, to me that is pretty much what the Catholic Church has always been about. It's a money institution. But then again, that's just my bias and my experience, my personal experience. I don't want to tick off a bunch of Catholics. But if you want to email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com or call us here, 1-888-520-RICK. I would love to have that discussion. Because I still remember those Mondays that the phone would ring and Mom would get all upset because, you know, the church is calling because there was no money in the envelope. And I'll, you know, till the day I die, I'll never forget that. because I remember how it tore her up. And, you know, it wasn't like, you know, I can understand the first time because maybe, hey, the kid pocketed the money. But when it's something that happens often and you go, look, you know, we don't have anything in the, there's nothing in the cupboard. There's nothing there. What do you want me to do? One of those things. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Wow. Another astonishing scientific breakthrough has been made. The benefit is something that can be identified just about by everybody, exulted Neil Carter, who helped produce this long-awaited advance for humankind. Is it a cancer cure? No, bigger than that. Is it a free, clean, perpetual source of energy? No, bigger even than that. What we have here is, are you ready? Apple slices that don't turn brown. Is this fabulous or what? Non-browning apple slices. Another marvel from the biotechnology profiteers who love to mess with the genetic makeup of the world's food supply. And this is truly a global accomplishment. The science of non-browning was pioneered in potatoes by Australian gene splicers who licensed it to Carter, a Canadian peddler of apple trees who hopes that American apple growers will now rip out their old-fashioned natural orchards and plant these biotech wonders of modern science. But it's going to be a hard sell. Genetically modified, said the head of Washington State's Apple Commission. That's a bad word in our industry. He's referring to the fact that consumers routinely reject foods they know to be altered. In fact, consumers are demanding more organic production, not stuff from a gene factory. Also, Carter could not have chosen a worse product to turn into a lab rat. Apples are the very symbol of nutrition and health, a perfect snack for children. Why mess with it? Besides, mothers know that a little lemon water is all it takes to keep apple slices from browning. This is Jim Hightower saying, this technology has no benefit for consumers, but it could fatten the bottom line of big box retailers, allowing them to sell old, inferior apples that look fresh only because they're still white. To learn more, call the Center for Food Safety, 202-547-9359.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Got an email this afternoon. A buddy of mine, Bill, sent me an email. Said, Rick, I was listening to Rush this afternoon, and a guy called in to talk about the only job that he could possibly find were temporary jobs with no health care and no pension. And can you guess what Rush's response was? His response was, get a job a temporary employee cannot do. Pretty nice, huh? And no, I mean, that's what I would, I'm going to be honest, what I expect him to say. What do you, you know, why would you call that guy and say, oh, the only job I can find is a temporary agency? That's what he's advocating for. That's what the guy believes in. I can't believe that someone would actually call that, call him and say that. And expect something positive out of it.
Well, the man said, well, I am going to college. And he's 45. He said, I'm 45.
Yeah, he's
it's hard for me to find employment.
He's probably going to one of those private colleges where he's getting raked over the coals and going to end up with nothing at the end of it.
Well, he did say he worked, where did he work? He worked in some private industry. He's making good money. He says he's making over $1,000 a week. So he probably, more likely, he's probably working union.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. And it's interesting that you bring up the fact that he may have been working union. You look at our labor laws in this country, and one of the things that I had hoped that the president would have done were to, you know, take a look at some of it, especially this issue of misclassification. You look at Federal Express or FedEx. I've argued that they've been misclassifying their workers for years. Their whole model is set up on cheating workers. You look at UPS, for instance. All of their workers are unionized. They make a very good wage. They have very good benefits, you know, health care, pension, all of those things, sick days, you know, vacations, all of that. The Federal Express folks, the FedEx people, especially the ground folks, who used to be RPS back, you know, years ago, they're all set up as independent contractors. So I can, you know, buy a truck and say I want to work for, I'm gonna be an independent contractor for Federal Express or FedEx, and I have to follow their rules. I have to wear their uniforms. I have to have their logo on my truck. I have to do everything their way, but I don't work for them. And you go, well, Rick, why is that important? Well, it's important for a number of reasons. First and foremost, it's impossible to unionize them, which is why they do it. You look here, I just saw a thing the other day that Amazon in the area was going to hire 900 people. But you're not actually working for Amazon. You're working for a subcontractor who's doing Amazon's work. And why do they do that? So that if those workers were to ever organize, Amazon could just say, sorry, we're gonna use a different subcontractor and bring in a whole different company. That's the reason they do this. The other part of this that's important is that they don't have to pay Federal Express or FedEx. They don't have to pay any workers' comp. They don't have to pay any Social Security. They don't have to pay any of that stuff. That's the responsibility of the worker. And to me, when you look at this, it's an unfair advantage that FedEx has over UPS. Now, look, I want companies to compete. I want them to go head-to-head, offer the best service, the best quality, the best speed, accuracy, productivity, whatever words you want to use. But I don't want a system where folks are forced to compete on who's willing to work for less, who's willing to slit the other guy's throat. That is not good for a country. And you look at today, the Journal of Commerce writes the decision dismisses most class action suits. The Teamsters had filed a suit. There were 28 class action suits against Federal Express or FedEx. 20 of them have been dismissed by Judge Robert Miller of Indiana. He's a U.S. District Judge. You know, basically throwing them out and said, you know what, things are going to stand the way they are. And for me, I got to be honest, this is where Congress has to step in. Not that they're going to with the Republicans in charge, but these are the kind of things that have to be leveled out. And this is where my hope for Obama was. If you remember us having these conversations right when he won, there were a number of things that I thought needed to be done, and this was one of those. This was one of those things that absolutely needed to be done. And you go, well, that's not really a big deal, is it? It's not really a big deal that FedEx gets this little carve out, is it? Is that a big deal? Is it a big deal that they're under completely different labor laws? They're under the FAA, like they're an airline. Is that a big deal? Well, yeah, it is. In fact, it's such a big deal that Cargo News Asia ran the story. It's such a big deal for them that a trade paper in Asia wrote about it, because it's going to give them that much bigger of a competitive advantage over UPS, and it's going to allow them to grow even larger. And that, again, you know, I look at this. This is the direction of this country. You've got two very different worldviews. You've got two companies with different worldviews doing the exact same thing. You've got UPS playing by the rules, paying their employees well, paying them vacation, health care, pensions, being good corporate citizens, being good employers. The American dream, solidly middle-class jobs, upper middle class, I would argue. And then you've got this other side, who's built on a house of cards, built on over-leverage, built on someone else taking responsibility, based on putting all the burden on the lowest common denominator, which is the worker. which vision of this country should we pursue? I mean, I guess that's really, for me, what this is about. Which direction do we go? If you agree with me that we all agree on the destination, we all want to live good, solid, middle-class existences. We want to have our own home. We want to raise our children in safe neighborhoods, good schools. We want to retire. You know, all those things that I think we all agree on at the end of the road, right? Question is, how do we get there? Do we go the FedEx route that cheats people, or do we go, or in my opinion, cheats their workers, or do we go the UPS route who takes the high road, in my opinion?
Well, let's look at history. When our country was at its zenith, you can argue, and you can make a very good argument for the 50s and early 60s, and what was happening, the middle class was able because of what was happening in the country, and yes, legislation and the right people in political power, and the middle class exploded, and the country benefited greatly. When you take care of the heart and soul of the country, which is the working class, which is the vast majority of our numbers, you take care of them, and you take care of America. It's that simple, and I do believe that.
Which is why, again, you know, I go back to this, and this is an important issue to me. And it's just not these two companies. I mean, there's a lot of this stuff that goes on, and it's something that has to be looked at very seriously, very seriously. I was reading Bill O'Reilly's blog. Bill O'Reilly writes a piece every now and again, and he was complaining about Jim McDermott, a congressman, Washington, I believe. And McDermott said, this is Christmas time. We're talking about Good Samaritans, the poor, the little baby Jesus in the cradle, and all this stuff. And then we say to the unemployed, we won't give you a check to feed your family. That is simply wrong. And I agree, that is wrong. Well, Bill O took offense to that. Said, yo, the liberal agenda, expand the handouts. He writes, unemployment benefits were extended again this year, and if the Obama tax compromise is passed, $150 billion more will be added to the deficit. $150 billion more will not be from the unemployment portion of it. I'm sorry, it's just not. But, you know, he likes to rile people up like that. He writes, by invoking the baby Jesus, McDermott puts an important question in play. What does a moral society owe to the have-nots? How much public money should go into those in financial trouble? And he goes in here talking a little bit about Jesus again, because they love to quote that. He says, for them, the baby Jesus wants us to provide no matter what the circumstance. But being a Christian, I know that while Jesus promoted charity at the highest level, he was not self-destructive. Here's the thing that I don't remember, and maybe you can help me with this, Jake. I don't remember Jesus ever asking anything from anybody in return for his charity. Now maybe I haven't gotten the new rewritten theological novel. Maybe I haven't gotten the rewrite. But I don't remember that. I don't remember that being the case.
I don't either.
And for someone like him, again, you know, they kind of twist things around a little bit. Well, how much more do we have to give them? Well, as a member of society, I think we need to keep people at the bottom from collapsing, because they pull all of us down. But they've got this mentality. It's okay to bail out the very wealthy, bail out the banks. It's okay to hand out billions, hundreds of billions to the top 1-2%. But the folks at the bottom? No. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, son. And if you don't have bootstraps, take the hair off your head and tie it together and make some. Doesn't that seem to be it? Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll wrap things up. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one? Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well? Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike. Call him at 243-3211. You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
I just saw in the New York Times here a minute ago that Bob Feller passed away. 92 years old, Bob Feller.
Bullet
was.
Bob.
That's a loss for the Cleveland area. I know he lived in Gates Mills, which is just a nice suburb outside of Cleveland. He was always a very gracious person for the city. He will be missed. What is going on with Michael Vick? Why in God's name would he do anything? Say anything with the word dog in it. I wouldn't even say.
He said he wants a dog.
I wouldn't even say. Give me a hot dog. I would say, give me a wiener. Give me a beef wiener.
Oh, come on.
Don't give me. If I were him, the word dog should be out of his vocabulary.
Sensationalized. Look, he said he's changed his mind.
He's changed his
mind. He served time in prison.
Uh huh. Uh huh. Go ahead.
So he wants a dog.
Uh huh.
You had a dog at one time in your life, didn't you?
Yeah, but there's a little bit different thing. It's a little different.
I understand that. And
I'm just saying from
he said he's changed.
From a public relations standpoint, him saying the word dog is a bad thing.
Now, PR, you're talking something different. But
so what kind of dog should he get?
I don't know.
Pomeranian?
Somehow I can't see that.
Something that, I'll tell you what
would be appropriate.
Something you could dust the corners with.
All right, you ask me, I'll tell you what would be a greyhound.
A greyhound? Do greyhounds fight?
No, you got that greyhound. They can both run.
Oh, there was something funny in that. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Well, you know, all right. Apparently,
all right, good.
Went right over your head.
Your comedy chops are coming along.
There you go. Went right over that head of yours.
Those lessons are coming. Those lessons are paying off.
You get the burn mark in your forehead there, right?
Those lessons are paying off. Good for you. Good for you.
I honestly, Rick, I mean, you asked the question. I honestly don't see the furor. I mean, some people
are so upset.
I'm thinking, look, the man paid for crimes. And I'm not making excuses for him, but the truth is, in rural southern, places, especially, you know, like where he came from.
Where'd he come from?
Was it Georgia?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
I believe it was. It's what I'm saying is it was an accept, whether it was moral, immoral, right or wrong, it was an accepted part of their life. He said he's learned his lesson, he served his prison term, and he's moving on with his life. You know, on some level, he could very well love dogs. I think he deserves the chance. I guarantee you there'll be people watching him if he buys a dog. So I really don't see the harm in him buying a dog. I mean, really.
It's amazing. It's amazing how, you know, when he got out of jail and he went to the Eagles, there was all this fervor about him going to the Eagles. Now that he's playing well, it's all forgiven. And now he wants a dog, and that's forgiven.
Well, I have to say, not only his performance in the field, he's handled himself extremely well. I have to say I'm surprised. My first reaction was, are you guys nuts?
Except for the dog thing.
But no, I just, you know, at the time he was serving prison and he came back, and I think they were desperate for a backup, and I thought I didn't think it was a good move, but it's proven to be. And you know what? This is America. Everybody deserves a chance.
Just not a dog. No dogs. Today, John Conyers, who I like John Conyers, a Democrat from Michigan, he said that, you know what, this whole thing over the WikiLeaks thing, I don't know, not a crime. The guy didn't commit any crimes, and we should not be prosecuting him. He said that America was founded on the belief that speech is sacrosanct. And he has dismissed calls for censorship of the media like Alan West. You know, I look at that and I'm going, you know, really? You censor the media? We really want to go and forget that whole First Amendment thing? And I look at this WikiLeaks thing, and the more I'm looking at it, the more there is stuff coming out that we absolutely needed to know.
Absolutely.
I look at the latest one that I've come across, revealing that Nouri al-Maliki, the guy who's the prime minister there in Iraq, our puppet guy. He says he believes that Chevron was negotiating with Iran. Why? Oil. And Chevron wouldn't be doing that in violation of really heavy sanctions if it wasn't okayed by our government. And I'm waiting for that to be the next one of these cables that comes out, the response back on, yeah, go ahead. I mean, to me, and we've talked about this a couple of times, to me, this story, the more that comes out, the more I think we need to know, and the better it is for our democracy.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. Why would our government give it even tacit approval?
This is back during the Bush years, so, I don't know. But, you know, this is what al-Maliki
said. Chevron is wholly owned American now?
No, but it's... We've got heavy, heavy sanctions against Iran. It's... Mm-hmm. Except for Dick Cheney and Halliburton. So, you know, a company that does business in this country, you're going to want to prevent them from doing business in Iran. And the fact that they were doing that kind of makes you wonder. Kind of makes you wonder. The story I saw today about Bradley Manning. Now, Bradley Manning is the guy who he's being accused of leaking the documents that this Julian Assange is being accused of leaking and being accused by Sarah Palin of being un-American. He's so un-American.
Yes, he is.
Yes, you twist into it. He is un-American. Oh, it's because he's not American.
You know, and you look.
But, you know, those little details just, it doesn't matter.
And you look into that sex appeal. You look at the nuts and bolts of that, and you just shake your head and say, oh, come on. This is, they're going after him, obviously.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, this Army private, he's been held in solitary confinement since May when the charges were brought against him. And, you know, there are some folks saying, you know, this is cruel and unusual. And, in fact, they're saying it's torture. And, you know, I got to be honest. You know, there's part of me that says, you know what? We need to... If it can happen to him, he's accused at this point. He's not been found guilty of anything. We should be treating him with respect and dignity. You're going to hold him in jail like anybody else we would. But this whole solitary confinement thing, locked away like they did to Jose Padilla. 4.5 years in solitary confinement, talking to nobody, that will drive you completely batty. And that's part of the thing here. But what you've got, he's got a lot of these Republicans, and of course, Trader Joe Lieberman, who want to kill this kid. You know, we need to kill this kid. I'm sorry, I'm missing the point there. But it's these would be the people that I would think would be in favor of open, transparent government, accountable. Because a lot of this stuff that's come out, man, you know, I'm just shocked. Like the thing with Yemen. I mean, that pops out in my head. The government in Yemen is bombing its own citizens at our request. I don't know. Anyway, this Saturday, if you're in the neighborhood, and if you're not, make your way into the neighborhood. We're going to be at the giant parking lot, 255 South Spring Garden Street in Carlisle. We will be broadcasting from there next week. But we'll be there from Saturday, December 18th at noon, all the way until Friday, December 24th, Christmas Eve, right there at noon. We will be packing up our truck and leaving. I want to thank ABF, the trucking company, for allowing us to use one of their trailers. Also, Allegheny Optical, there in Carlisle, for donating a portion of a skid. That's great. Thank you. Also, AFSCME Local 2456. Thank you for your support. I want to thank everybody who has donated to this. And again, go to hungryandhomeless.org. Use your credit card. It is tax deductible. We'll help come April 15th and make a small donation. Jake and I will probably be spending, I'll be there the entire time from Saturday at noon all the way till Friday. I'm going to kick him out at some point. The snoring will probably keep me awake. we'll be there. I'll be there the whole time. You can watch it right on the website at therickssmithshow.com. It would be great to see some of you folks come out and support what I think are two great organizations who do very good work in our community and well worth the support. And, you know, I live for these things because what happens is we get to get out and we get to meet folks. We get to meet people who we've been talking to here on the program for the past couple of months. And I think it's always a great time. Again, but here's the thing, and this is what you're going to have to remember. If you're going to come and argue with me, this is just like the burlesque shows. You're going to have the sliding glass window. it's kind of like that. In order to keep arguing, you got to put money into the pot. you got to feed the meter, if you will. I'll argue with you all day, but you got to be feeding the meter.
We'll have to get a big jug for that.
Well, we'll have a box and be locked, and Project Share will come and take it every night, to fill their coffers.
Well, although once again, if they're bringing cakes and pies, maybe that's in lieu of food, in lieu of money, we'll allow them to argue for a while.
What, to throw at you?
No, they argue with you, and I'll eat the cookies and the cakes.
All right, I'm there with you.
I'm a team player here.
I am right there with you. Beautiful. Again, hungryandhomeless.org is the website. You can go there and, again, make a donation. We're looking forward to this. We're just hours away. This should be a great event, and I'm looking forward to filling the truck and doing some good things to help them out in the coming year. And if you want to help, there's still time. You can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. We're looking for, for Christmas carolers to come out. We're looking for a Santa Claus. That would be great. So if you've got any ideas, rick@therickssmithshow.com. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. It's coming like the flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, in amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USA.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Well, they're stealing down on Wall Street and in Washington, too. You know, it makes me.